This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Happy Monday to you. Hope you had a great weekend. Big sports weekend in the city, meaning lots to get to, of course. Winnipeg Jets win their third game in a row. Remember how long last year took them to win three in a row? They've done it so far this year. They beat the Carolina Hurricanes 2-1. They improved to 3-2 and host Columbus tomorrow night. Minnesota Friday. We'll delve into all of that. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers have clinched a playoff spot after beating the BC Lions, but it came at a price. Some injuries. We'll delve into that as well. Big upset week once again in the National Football League, and some major injuries continue to pile up. The Major League Baseball playoffs are well underway, and some questionable decisions being made by Joe Maddon, and the Houston Astros big train just keeps rolling, baby. Can't stop it. Woo-woo! All aboard! Get out of the way, Judge!
It's about to stop, man.
So we'll delve into that as well. And plenty of guests. Ian Mendez from TSN 1200 in Ottawa, the voice of the Jets, Mr. Paul Edmonds, is going to recap the weekend with us. Marshall Ferguson, the Tiger Cats play-by-play man. And Craig Button, TSN hockey analyst. We're going to have two chances for you to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas as well. And we're going to have an hour of your phone calls to wrap it all up and give us your thoughts on everything. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki. Gentlemen, happy Monday. How are you?
Not too bad. A good weekend. A lot of weird things happened on the weekend with the losing Leggett, Kulikov, Perreault, unknown, and then the NFL just gets decimated. You know, arguably three of its top five stars out now with J.J. Watt, OBJ, and of course, having a brain fart at 6-6.
The God.
Rodgers. Yeah, Rodgers, just unbelievable. Aaron and then Rodgers. Some games, like the just really bizarre things going on yesterday. But, you know, a good weekend, man. The weather's still nice and lots. This is good time of year, right, when you can really appreciate the days that remain for us to get outside and enjoy something, you know, late fall type days. It's nice out.
And basketball's getting underway this week, too. So now we're kind of entering the prime time of the sports calendar. But I just kind of felt like my weekend was dampened by what happened yesterday. Rodgers goes down. The Leggett news comes down. No pro cool. Like, it was just all this tsunami of negativity that just kind of washed over the entire sporting world, and especially maybe not especially here in Winnipeg, but for the Bombers, outside of Nichols being hurt. That's worst case scenario.
Yeah, to lose one of your strongest contributors on what is clearly the weakest part of your team—that's a bad combo right there, right?
And just what he means to the team and all the big plays he makes in all different areas of the game. So we'll delve into that as well. Let's get into the Jets and the Carolina Hurricanes. I tweeted out after two, it wasn't pretty, but neither am I. We'll see what happens. Brian Little opened the scoring. Jeff Skinner on the power play. And then Nikolaj Ehlers using his speed to find some space. Gets a game winner. And Connor Hellebuck has won his third game in a row. What did you think of the game, gentlemen?
I had tweeted during the game. It was like a neutral zone wrestling match. Like Carolina, they look pretty impressive, don't they? And just in how dialed in they are to what Bill Peters and company brings to the table. So I thought it was I was fascinated. Some people don't like watching it, but I really love watching teams that are able to sort of impose or direct what kind of game it's going to be, and to the degree that the Carolina Hurricanes took away or caused an immense amount of trouble for the Jets in the neutral zone. I thought that was really cool. I don't ever remember, and I'm surprised it wasn't knocked over, but I can't recall hearing, and up in the press, like you're way up there on the press box looking down up over the game, and the noise that the bar hit of Patrick Laine from the slot there is, I'll never forget the noise of it. Again, they're normally ping or ting, those sorts of things, as opposed to a resounding clank. And I literally, you wonder if the net came off of its moorings, for sure. And then also, what was nice to see during the course of the game, in the first couple of periods, Dustin Byfuglien playing a controlled game, and then I'm not sure what happened, and it a little bit earlier on, but the third period basically putting his foot down on the physicality part of the game and really like asserting himself. That was really nice to see. And I don't know what needs to be done to get the big fella to play with that sort of chip on his shoulder from here on out, basically. But boy, if Paul Maurice and if this crew can somehow tap into Buff to just be a little ornery and just be a little bit angry like that, that would be real nice to see.
Yeah, and the thing with Buff in that third period especially was he going out of his way to chase hits?
Yeah,
and were they were huge hits, but they weren't these thunderous, yeah, open ice Scott Stevens, you know, is he going to be suspended, is he not going to be? It was just, and this is the thing with Buff, right? If he just goes out there and finishes his checks normally, and Paul Maurice said it after the game, and he's 100% right, he changes the complexion of the game. Yeah. Single-handed, like Dustin Byfuglien single-handedly changed the way that game was played in the final 20 minutes. And there's just maybe a handful of players that can do that in terms of just using their physicality. And he's one of them. And if they could harness that, this team becomes a different sort of animal to play against every single night. And, you know, it was nowhere near a perfect game. It was not pretty whatsoever. And it was kind of it seemed like a game of tag in the neutral zone where nobody really wanted to do anything offensively or creatively with the puck. But the one thing the Jets do have in these tight scenarios, you know, if they're able to be competent defensively, which they were, is they'll outskill 90% of the teams in the NHL. And when it comes to needing that one goal, and it's usually a display of offensive brilliance, you know, the Jets, their bottom six won't be able to do it, but their top six, not too many teams in the NHL that can match up with that, and you got a dose of that with Ehlers staying white hot to start the year.
I was real concerned in the last 3 minutes Dustin Byfuglien was going to take a penalty. It's just the way he plays like that. He oftentimes gets called for being physical or overly physical, but I thought, yeah, he had a good game. He led the Winnipeg Jets in ice time at 24 minutes, and I agree with you guys. The Carolina Hurricanes came as advertised. They are vicious on the forecheck, tenacious, I should say, is a better word, and then they just clog up the neutral zone. And I thought Paul Maurice even mentioned it in the post game where they couldn't make a pass over 10 feet. Like it was, and I guess this leads me to not only because it's the third game in a row, not only because a week ago, man, there was some really, really concerned people in this city, and rightfully so. But just the fact that they won a game like that, like they came out and didn't have their best and it was ugly and it wasn't pretty and they weren't, you know, toe-to-toe or tape-to-tape passes as we're accustomed to, but yet they managed to win the game and managed to get their third win in a row.
Yeah, and the whole third win in a row thing, I think, was really, it's just kind of overblown, right? I said last year, give me two wins and a loss, all the way through the season, and I'm fine and dandy with that. But yeah, this whatever the third win in a row, that doesn't mean a whole lot to me. But what means the most to me, and I think the point that you're trying to make there, JT, is the distance traveled, more or less, in the 10 days, you know, starting on the 4th of October to the 14th, which was Carolina, and the train wreck, like the absolute chaos and all the rest of the garbage we saw defensively in those first two games that were like, what in the hell is that? And to the degree that it turned around and, you know, to win a game as they did against Carolina that will demand a certain level of discipline in response to what Carolina's bringing to the table, that was really refreshing. And it comes at a good time now where you have six games against three opponents in Columbus, Minnesota, who's been really unlucky this year, and Pittsburgh. So the team that sort of came off the rails early on, able to catch traction and now settled down, and certainly everyone, and maybe no one more so than themselves, understand that you just can't freewheel it the way that they did in the Toronto and Calgary games, and it's got to be something much more along the lines of what we witnessed against Vancouver and Carolina going forward for them to have a chance to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the best part of the win streak is, you know, the Oilers game, I thought the Jets played really good. But the past two, they haven't had their best outing, but they picked up 4 points. So
and that's what I meant. Like, I mean, they're not playing at their best. And these are games that potentially when they're not playing at their best in the past, they haven't always gotten points.
Yeah, so they're going to have to reach another level here, especially I know Minnesota's record isn't great right now, and they're dealing with a bunch of injuries, but they've always struggled with the Wild, and Columbus is a hell of a team. They're one of the better teams in the league. So if they play like they did the past two games against Columbus, you know, they're probably going to get their doors beaten pretty good. So they're going to have to find another level and improve on that. But at the very least, you picked up points, and it was at the point when you were 0-2 where process for a little bit just kind of went out the window, and you just needed some results right off the bat. But they are going to have to improve the way they play, and they're going to have to improve that bottom six because they're getting Zippo from anything outside their top two lines right now.
Well, this is the Big Show, TSN 1290. Jim Troy and Brandon, we're breaking down the 2-1 win by the Jets over the Carolina Hurricanes. And that's where we sit right now. Matthew Perreault didn't finish the game. Dmitry Kulikov didn't finish the game. So that top six could look different this week, depending on how they are evaluated medically. They had the day off yesterday, the Winnipeg Jets. They'll get back at it today with a practice. And then, of course, a pregame tomorrow. We'll have the game at 7 o'clock live on TSN 1290 between the Columbus Blue Jackets and the Winnipeg Jets. So we'll have to see how the lineup shakes down with injuries. But one position that doesn't have injuries is goaltending. Connor Hellebuyck, 28 saves on 29 shots once again, gets his third straight victory. Paul Maurice was saying Hellebuyck deserves a third game on Saturday on the weekend when he spoke about it, but we also don't want to let Steve Mason not play for very long. He didn't want to give Mason a game without getting a practice in. They will practice today. So what does that mean this week with two games? Tuesday at home against Columbus and Friday at home against Minnesota. Is it Connor Hellebuck's net to lose until he loses? Or does Steve Mason, after he gets a practice in today, get another shot at it?
I still don't think it's related to winning or losing so much as it is the level of play. And I see no reason whatsoever to pull out Hellebuyck at this point in time. I don't know how long when Paul Maurice says he doesn't want somebody to sit for too long, but is waiting till the 26th, 27th, back-to-back games, is that too long? And for us as fans, can't stand this two games in a week schedule. It sucks ducks, right? We've got to wait far too long to watch the boys play. But to pull out Connor Hellebuyck right now, I just don't see why you would do that. Why disrupt what is what you basically would pray for as an organization? It's wonderful right now in what he's bringing to the table. He's playing at a real high rate, and I see no reason to pull him out.
Yeah, I know you'd like to get Mason back in, but he's playing lights out right now. And over the course of his games, you can't show me a goal that he should have stopped. So he's doing everything right so far. And if you're looking, even if you were looking to get Steve Mason into one of these two games this week, I don't think I would pick the Columbus game as that one either. I know you have to wait a couple more days till Friday against Minnesota, but if I had to pinpoint one of these two games where the Jets could struggle and maybe give up some big-time offensive chances, it would be this first one against Columbus, and I would maybe try to get Mason back into it Friday against Minnesota. But for the next game, you need wins, right? Like the more you can stack up in a row here and get on a bit of a hot run, I know you want to get both your goalies in and have them fresh, but at the same time, when Hellebuyck's playing like this and when you have a goalie on this kind of a run, I think you just let it go. You let it go until the hot stuff runs out, and then you go back to Steve Mason, and hey, if he gets hot, then you roll with him for a few more games.
Yeah, I don't even want to guess on what you do with this situation, and it is a very, very good situation. I do believe in the fact that you have to get Steve Mason back in there, and not just because it's been a while, but because the team really left him out to dry on his first two games, and they haven't so much or as much as they did with Mason with Connor Hellebuyck. However, I don't want to – every point is so crucial to this team. I think you leave Connor Hellebuyck in tomorrow night, have two more days of practice Wednesday, Thursday, and then you give Mason the net on Friday against the Minnesota Wild. That's the way I would do it, but if that's the way it's going to be, who knows? We'll find out more once they hit the ice today and hear from the head coach. Some injuries to deal with there. Some injuries to deal with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and one devastating one for sure. We'll get into that at the bottom of the hour, but up next, we'll talk some injuries in the National Football League next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
We'll talk about the Bombers clinching a playoff spot and their injury woes in the game that they did it, coming up at the bottom of the hour on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Jim, Troy, and Brandon, of course, Ian Mendez, Paul Edmonds, Marshall Ferguson, Craig Button, all going to join us as well today. And two opportunities for you to clinch or get in or qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas as well. TSN 1290 is excited for UFC Fight Night December 16th at Bell MTS Place. Tickets go on sale this Friday at 10 a.m. through Ticketmaster.ca. You can win tickets by texting FIGHT to 129090. We'll also be throwing in pre-fight dinner at the official sports bar of the UFC in Canada, Boston Pizza. Standard message rates may apply for text entries. Grand prize winner will be announced Monday, October 23rd, right here on The Big Show. Want a chance to win? We are adding a pair of tickets to the TSN 1290's Man Cave. Simply visit TSN 1290 for contest details and to enter now. Gentlemen, the Aaron Rodgers broken collarbone is expected to keep him out for the regular season. Lots to talk about around that, but I first want to talk about the injury. Watching the news come out and seeing it go on throughout the day, some people feel it was a dirty follow-through by Barr. He didn't have to do that. The ball was gone. Other people feel Aaron Rodgers should know better than to watch his pass like that. What did you make of the injury? And then we'll get into the fact of how devastating it is to the Packers.
Yeah, I think that's a bunch of silly talk that it's a late hit or cheap or anything like that. That's just football. Like, if for Pete's sake, we talk about all the time the tiny window to hit quarterbacks and try and come to an understanding of game speed. And when you're closing the space like that, the things going on, that's a hit. You see that hit dozens upon dozens of times during the course of a Sunday afternoon in the NFL. And unfortunately for Aaron Rodgers, and you see this all the time, same with Jameis Winston yesterday, it seems the quarterbacks most often get hurt when the defensive player lands on the player as the player hits the turf like that. And it's just a real unfortunate result, not just for Green Bay, but for the NFL. But I know Rodgers was beaconed over to the Vikings bench as he's leaving, and of course Green Bay Packer fans, and there's a bunch of them, are going to be really upset about it as well. But man, that's just football. You have to take that unfortunate result in a play that you see maybe more than 100 times during the course of a Sunday.
I mean, Aaron Rodgers is my favorite player to watch in the NFL. But if he gets up from that hit, is anybody calling it dirty? Probably not. He might have given him, he might have driven him a bit at the end of it, but it was pretty bang bang. And you know, I looked at the hit that Alex Smith took in the Pittsburgh Kansas City game, where the guy came in late and low, and that to me perfectly encapsulates the results driven, I guess, determination of whether a hit is dirty or suspension worthy, right? Because that play there can tear his knee, tear his ACL, his foot, his ankle. There's a very real chance that hit, you know, 8 times out of 10 ends up with a quarterback out for the rest of the season. Whereas we see a hit like Rodgers took all the time, it's just you land on it, you land on your shoulder a certain way, and collarbones, just kind of a freak injury where sometimes they break and sometimes they don't. So it's really just unfortunate, and it sucks. It ruins a team's season. Like it's that simple. A team that could have went to the Super Bowl basically watch their season go down the drain with one hit.
Packers head coach McCarthy saying after he's got the two quarterbacks, that's what he's dealing with, and rightfully so. Like, I understand the question of do they go out and get somebody else, but that's not a question for postgame in my mind. It's not like he sat down during the rest of the game and was looking at who they could bring in and all that. But what do they do? Do they stand pat with their backups, or do they go get somebody? Like, what's the best case for the Green Bay Packers to do? Because I know it was off the bench and all that, but
Brent Huntley did not look like he was going to be the answer. And I get what do they do here? And everyone points to Colin Kaepernick, and then as timing would have it, of course, he comes out with his collusion lawsuit against them, I believe it was yesterday morning, right? So it's just that's hard to imagine that that's going to possibly transpire. And then I get a kick out of the commentator saying, well, he wouldn't be able to fit anyway because it takes years to come in there and understand the offense at hand and all the rest of it. So I just – I mean, the Kaepernick thing is dead. There, we've seen so many. The quality of quarterbacks and some of the names that have surfaced the last couple of times when teams have had to reach out to for guys is remarkable. So I would suspect that Hundley will be the answer here, and the Packers are dead. And now that division completely opens up wide open. And you know, if Matt Stafford can't take advantage of this situation, for the love of God, right? And that just drives home that much more so even his contract. But if the Lions can't go win this division, as good as the Vikings' defense is, their struggles, what's going on with quarterback and all the rest of it, but if Matt Stafford can't step up here, when can he ever step up?
Yeah, to me, there's two clear scenarios here that the Packers have to look at. If they know Rodgers is done for the year, then you give it to Hundley and you just let the kid go. Just give him the season and see what he has. See if he's a legit NFL quarterback, and then, you know, maybe he becomes a trade chip, or maybe he becomes your guy that you groom in waiting here. But if you think Aaron Rodgers has any chance of returning near the end of the regular season or into the playoffs, then you have to bring in a veteran. You have to find somebody to come in, because Hundley looked nowhere near ready, and you just know that if you can get into the playoffs with Rodgers, you have a chance at going all the way. And you look at the teams, and this isn't just an NFC thing here, but who are the really scary good teams in the NFL this year? Well, I don't know.
We're going to delve into that.
I don't think there's any team that's – I mean, you look at Kansas City with one loss, Philly with one loss. They're good teams, but is anybody scared of going into their home stadiums and coming out with a win?
The NFL landscape, going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, the NFL landscape as of week six – there is nowhere near a definitive tier of elite teams.
Right, for the league, yeah.
We'll talk more on NFL later in the show. The Bombers beat the Lions. It came at a price. We'll talk Winnipeg Blue Bombers next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Gypsum Drywall Interiors present Caring for Kids. Support the staff and services of the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba today. Text KIDS to 129090. Standard message rates may apply. Every time you do, Gypsum Drywall Interiors will donate $1 to the Children's Hospital, up to $1,000. Your actions can help the Children's Hospital help keep caring for kids across Manitoba. Kids like Michaela, who is currently battling cancer. For more on Caring for Kids, visit TSN1290.ca. Jim Telf, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you today. Happy Monday on The Big Show, TSN 1290, 35 minutes past the hour. Royal Sports Power Hour coming up. Paul Edmonds is going to join us in the next hour. Ian Mendez, your first chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas. NHL news and notes as well. We might hear a comment or two from head coach Paul Maurice. We'll also get into some of Connor Hellebuck's comments post-game against the Carolina Hurricanes with a 2-1 win for the Jets. They were off yesterday. They'll get back to practice today. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers beat the BC Lions on the weekend. Clinched a playoff spot. Let's start there. One job is done. The next job is to get a home playoff date. Get your thoughts on the game overall.
Well, who would have thought that BC and Winnipeg would turn into a defensive battle of epic proportions? It was pretty wild, for sure, how defensive this game was. That's what stood out the very most, for sure. In Saskatchewan's first 9 possessions, I believe, they punted 8 times. The first half, there were 14 possessions and 11 punts. No offensive touchdowns in the first half. Just the nifty punt return for a touchdown by Fogg. And I guess also that what stood out there, the hit on Darvin Adams. I remember that. The shoulder, it was almost weird, right? Because it looked a lot kind of like a hockey check, the shoulder-to-shoulder aspect of it. And Darvin Adams doesn't have a lot of meat in his bones, and it's not hard to imagine that shoulder just got blasted there. It's real. That looks like he's going to be out for an extended period of time. But by and large, they did what they needed to do, And similar to the Jets game a little bit later in the day, right? It wasn't really smooth. It wasn't if you liked offense, it wasn't all that impressive in that manner. But there's kind of a sort of a muddy, ugly sort of a game.
Yeah, and I wouldn't necessarily, I guess, get mad at the Bomber offense or be upset with how they played because BC had given up a bunch of points going into the game, because football is this weird animal where sometimes once the game starts, it morphs into something that you can't really get out of at some point. And it just seemed like after the first couple drives for each team that it was going to be this epic slugfest.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was – that was as physical as you'll see a football game.
Yeah.
And it was – and really, when it's just odd. Whenever games happen like that, you basically just hope that it's your top guys that don't end up – having to leave the game due to injury, because you know there's people that are going to get injured in the game and there's nothing you can do about it, and you just kind of hope that, you know, everything rolls your way in terms of the, you know, the injury dice. And unfortunately it didn't work out that way for the Bombers, but you know, it's at least you can see a game where if things do get physical like that, you know, the Bombers can come out on top, and you know, the final score didn't really or wasn't indicative of, I guess, their performance in it, because BC kind of put the sugar on top of the cake there with a couple ATDs when the game was already out of reach. But yeah, I at least the defense bounced back pretty nicely, right? You know, coming off that poor outing against Hamilton, they were really physical. Jonathan Jennings just doesn't have it this year for whatever reason, but the Bomber defense, you know, up until the last 5 or 6 minutes or so, when the game was essentially over, They took it pretty good to BC.
So
props to them.
One of the things coming into this game, though, Jennings had thrown for like 325 and then 347 in the two games coming into this game. So it set up to me like, Jonathan Jennings is going to have another career night. Take into consideration, Lou Lay threw for 404 on the Bombers the last time they played BC. So I thought that Jonathan Jennings was going to be going up and down the field on the Bombers' defense, and it was going to be up to Matt Nichols and the offense to keep up, but it was the exact opposite of that, the way the defense just sort of ruled the day.
Well, we don't know the extent of Darwin Adams' injury, but we do know that of Maurice Leggett. He has ruptured or torn his Achilles tendon. Torn is the official word, so I'll go with that. Torn his Achilles tendon and is done for the season. After the game, Mike O'Shea did not know the extent of his injury, but here's the head coach's thoughts and reaction to Leggett being carried off the field.
I mean, it's tough. It's tough for his teammates. It's an interesting game, you know. You get some highs and lows in the middle of every single game, and an injury creates that too, right? So he makes a nice play. It's well blocked up. Comes down with a ball to help us get a win. Let alone all the other plays he made during the game, and then he's out, and the guys have to manage their emotions really well, because they're talking about a teammate, and they know how tough the game of football can be. So same with the coaches, you know, you have to be able to quickly make that next move, and the guys need to be available and out there and ready to fill in and play well for Mo as well as their teammates, right?
That's head coach Mike O'Shea talking about Maurice Leggett before finding out the extent of the injury and just seeing him being carted off the field. As I said, he's done for the year. They announced it yesterday afternoon. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers did torn Achilles. How big of a loss is this?
Oh, it's monumental. And I don't know. I wonder what they're going to do as far as, you know, if it was on the weak side linebacker and you got Santos, Knox, you got Knox, Ian Wilde. Like, there's a lot of depth on that other side. I don't know who they put in at Maurice Leggett. There's a lot more coverage that comes into play on the strong side there, and I don't know what they do here. You probably couldn't have lost a more important position where there's no one really there to that you can just go, okay, this is our guy. Bam, we'll be fine and dandy with him in there. I don't know what they're going to do, man. And it's like I said to start the show off, this is obviously the phase of their game where they have the most concern. And then to lose arguably your best player off of that unit is monumental. This will be something to overcome here. And you wonder from a depth standpoint, can the Bombers answer this call here? They've done it brilliantly the last couple of years. Can someone step up here and grab this?
I'm not around the room a lot, or if much at all. I don't know who's the big boys in that room and the leaders. And I know on offense it's Harris and Nichols and all that. But Jamal Westerman and Maurice Leggett, I would think, would be some of the most vocal guys in that room. And everything that he brings. I mean, I was talking about him potentially being an MOP candidate just for all he does for the team. On the field, it's a glaring, glaring hole. But even off the field, you know, Westerman goes down, now Leggett. These injuries are mounting up. It's going to be very interesting how this team finishes out the season.
I don't know if interesting is the right word. I think terrifying. Honestly, like this, outside of Matt Nichols being hurt, this was the worst possible injury this team could suffer. Losing Mo Leggett, I don't know. I don't want to be an alarmist or anything, but... But how do you honestly? How do you
are
beat
you
Calgary
reaching for that bell?
Well, how do you beat Calgary without Mo Leggett?
Yeah.
How do you do it? Yeah. If you can show me a way that it happens, I would love to know. I think the Bombers can win a home playoff game.
It needs to be the answer to that is unknown, but maybe like you just wonder because they must have a plan B there, right? So you just kind of wonder can someone come out of nowhere, basically rise from the ashes and answer the bell?
I don't want to take stuff away from other guys. Like, other guys are going to have to step up, and somebody will. Like, we saw it with Knox and whatnot. But when we talk like this, it's not knocking other guys. It's a total compliment to Maurice Leggett and what he brings to this franchise.
And I think when you're talking how Knox came up, you know, after Wild and Santos Knox, those were their positions. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how much depth they've got on that side for the strong side linebacker where it's you're a hybrid, right? Like, there's a lot of coverage involved on that side, much more so than the weak side. So that's why it's a little bit tricky here.
Yeah, kind of like the honey badger for the Cardinals, right? Tyrann Mathieu, where safety, linebacker, D, like whatever you want to put him at, yeah, don't worry, he'll have that guy covered over there. Now you kind of lose this joker card that the Bombers had, and I just don't think he's replaceable. Maybe you switch up your linebacking core and maybe you put a DB in there and just focus on coverage more so than stopping the run. But I don't know. But you know, you look at a team like Calgary, for example, and they could lose, say, Alex Singleton, and it's a big loss for them. But they have more than enough pieces around on that defense where it's not a crippling blow. The Bombers just aren't that kind of a team. They just don't have the people necessary, I think, to step up and create that void. Similar to when Westerman went out, there wasn't a ton of concern because the D-line and pass rush, you know, there's some players that can step up. I just don't think that exists for Mo Leggett.
Here's head coach Mike O'Shea on players having to step up at this point of the season.
As always, and as always with every other team too. I mean, it's just a matter of guys, you know, however their opportunity comes up, and they might, like I said, they're not going to like the way they get opportunities, but they're going to make the best of it, and they're going to think about it in terms of how they're going to play well for their teammate who might not be able to play.
And this is like, that's on one side of the ball. I think we're going to hear very shortly that Darvin Adams is out for a handful of weeks as well. Yeah,
that's where I was going to go after that. So then the receiving corps too.
Don't see many hits like that. Like it was so clean. It was remarkably clean, but just the shoulder to shoulder and to the degree that Darvin Adams exploded off of the lion who levied the hit and right away, right? You see a hit like that where it compacts like that right in the shoulder, that just looked real bad.
Yeah, well, yeah, and it was a perfect hit, like absolute textbook. And it's hits like that that make me kind of scoff at people when they go, well, you can't take headshots out of football. Well, yeah, you can. Because we just saw a perfect, absolutely devastating blow, and there was nowhere near any contact towards Adams' head there. But sorry,
you know,
go ahead.
In the Packers-Vikings game, too, that blindside hit, I know that it's a blindside block, but that was shoulder into the chest, and they called it. Now, there was head contact.
I thought there was some head contact.
After, like, once the collision was made. Yeah, that's a bad example. You're right.
Well, and the one thing I'll bring
I
up
thought it was cleaner than
in
that.
The subject is the flag thrown at Solomon Alamimian for the hit on Matt Nichols where he kind of falls awkwardly and is down on the turf for a while. It looks like he tweaked his back or something, but he gets up. I don't know what in the world Solomon Alamimian is supposed to do in that situation where Matt Nichols is falling awkwardly forward. And Solomon Alamimian is coming in at 100 miles an hour. And there's no way in the world for him to contort or to change anything. And he makes some contact with the head of Matt Nichols. And you see hits like that, and it's just like, man, there's nothing a defensive player can do in that situation.
Well, there is good news, along with all this bad news that came out of the victory, is the Bombers have clinched a playoff spot, and head coach Michael Shea was asked after the game if he'd be celebrating the fact they've made the postseason.
This film session tomorrow probably won't be very pretty, you know, so I don't know. We don't have time for that right now. I mean, it's exciting for the guys. They're excited, but we're going to stick to the way we've been doing things, and they'll have fun tonight, and they'll celebrate with their teammates, and then we'll get back to work tomorrow.
You know, if I was in that locker room, and I think the guys in this team will be of the same mindset, securing a playoff spot means SFA, like absolutely nothing. What matters is getting that home playoff spot. Then, you know, then go have a couple wobbly pops with the boys, but securing a playoff spot, no.
Oh, nothing wrong with a couple wobbly pops after a playoff. Regardless. You just have a couple more when you clinch home field next week.
I was going to say, I think Michael Shea's definition of celebrating would be having two wobbly pops as opposed to one after the game, and then right back to business and watching game film. The Bombers are in the postseason. They have clinched a playoff spot. They have three games to go. They go to Toronto next week. They'll be there on Saturday at 3 p.m. Central is kickoff. Of course, we'll have Manuk Dencher Blue Bomber game day and everything else that goes into the coverage of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers as they now try to grasp a home playoff date. We'll take a break. Back to the NFL and Major League Baseball playoffs. And don't forget, top of the hour is the Royal Sports Power Hour. Plenty of hockey to come on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruiz. Wiki, weekday 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruiki with you. Lots to get to today. I want to remind you that TSN 1290 and Not Auto Corps present the Blue Bus before every Winnipeg Blue Bombers home game this season. We're taking W fans to Investors Group Field in our Not Auto Corp VIP Blue Bus. We'll pick you up and drop you off the Not Auto Corp VIP tent to tailgate before the game. Then after all the football action, take you back to wherever you started. Prize includes six tickets to an upcoming Blue Bombers home game and free transportation to and from. Enter to win now at TSN1290.ca. So with the Packers situation, does Colin Kaepernick get a phone call? Or does this filing of a grievance for collusion against him from the owners to keep him out of the NFL basically end his NFL career?
Yeah.
Or was it over before? Or
I think whatever possibility there was of him going somewhere, the final nail in the coffin for anyone that had a dream of him playing in the league again would be filing a grievance of collusion and all the rest of it. Like it's over and done with now.
But he knows that. Yep. Like he knew that. Well, once you file something like this, you know your playing days are over. Like it's that simple. Now it just comes down to, and collusion's we all kind of say and think that's what's happening, but to file something like that, you need to have some pretty concrete hard evidence.
That, right? Yeah.
So either he's really pulling out something out of his back pocket and hoping for a Hail Mary, or he does have something interesting.
Wicks, I don't think he needs to prove it. For him to because the NFL will probably want to settle instead of having to relinquish all kinds of emails. Like they could get dragged through the mud real good here, and goodness only knows what might be revealed if they start exposing emails and conversations back and forth and all those sorts of things. So to me, it's I would expect here at some point down the road to see that there's a settlement.
So in my mind, and I have no problem with him filing this, I just have a problem with him doing it now. Like, not just because of the Rodgers injury, because this was obviously in the works before that happened, but why not wait till, like, week 12, 15, 16 to be – because this is the kind of pressure I think that helps his cause is when Aaron Rodgers goes down. And maybe 2 weeks from now, Drew Stafford goes down.
There's already how many – like, look at the quarter. People have been laughing at the quarterbacks being given opportunities for weeks and months already, right?
But the more quarterbacks that go down and the more jobs there are, that's a better case for collusion.
To me, once Marcus Mariota went down in Tennessee and they didn't bring him in, you're done. You're done. Marcus Mariota, the Titans literally run the exact offense that you would have in place for a guy like Colin Kaepernick. If there was, you could not create a player more perfectly designed to fit in for Marcus Mariota than Colin Kaepernick. What do? They signed Brandon Whedon, a guy who clearly can't hack it in the NFL. So he knew he was done. I think that's why he does it. That's why he's, you know, filed that collusion thing now, is he sees some of the guys that are signed, and it's like, well, there's clearly no hope for me moving forward.
All right, we'll talk some Major League Baseball playoffs. Justin Verlander. Well, first of all, the Astros win Friday night at home. Ooh. Then Justin Verlander goes 9 innings, over 100 pitches, after pitching 200 innings in the regular season, and ends up getting a 2-1 victory. I'm not surprised the Astros are up 2-0. I am stunned that Justin Verlander went 9 innings at this stage of his career in the postseason. And the reporters on our station yesterday on TSN 1290 with Dave Hodge and the crew, we're talking about, like, Corey Kluber's another guy that pitched 204 innings and can't get through the playoffs. The history of guys, aces going to, Clayton Kershaw's another guy. Of all those names, the last guy I thought that could go 9 innings against the Yankees lineup and get a win in the playoffs after pitching 200 innings was Justin Verlander.
And wicked game, like fun as heck to watch. Huh? That's these all the games are now, and especially the Astros Yankees games are just wicked tight, fun to watch. I don't think it's over though, man. I don't think it's serious.
Oh, I don't think it's over. Yeah, no. I mean, it's going to be crazy tonight at Yankee Stadium. Last night, Joe Maddon. It's funny what a year can do. The smartest guy in baseball ends the curse for the Cubs. Last night, John Lackey on, 2 outs, 2 on, and Wade Davis's closer, who just went 2+ innings to get a save in the playoffs earlier, sitting in the dugout or in the bullpen. Your thoughts on that decision? Justin Turner takes him yard, Dodgers up 2-0.
I don't have a lot of thoughts on him, but Joe Maddon seemed, after the game, to be comfortable with, I know he's being raked over the coals here, but he explained it, I thought, pretty well and seemed okay with the way things transpired there.
Yeah, I'm not a fan in baseball of kind of looking after the fact and getting on managers for bullpen decisions. Having said that, John Lackey gave up the most home runs in the NL, and the second he came in, I just had a feeling that this ball game was over. I didn't think there was. And you know what? To be fair, though, maybe if that 3-2 count there on the batter previous to that, if he's able to get that guy out, then we're not really talking about Joe Maddon's decision. But once he walked that guy and Turner came up, It was trouble.
And you're basically
hoping for, well, maybe it'll go to the warning track and they'll be able to snag it in.
Royal Sports Power Hour is next. Kicking us off is Mr. Ian Mendez on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Welcome back to The Big Show on TSN 1290, and as the gentleman just told you, the Royal Sports Power Hour, your first chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas this week is coming up in this hour. Paul Edmonds, voice of the Winnipeg Jets, will join us at the bottom of the hour, talk Jets and Hurricanes, and set up the week that will be. 6 games remain in the month, 2 against Columbus, 2 against Minnesota, and 2 against the defending, 2-time Stanley Cup defending champions, Pittsburgh Penguins. Going to be an interesting rest of the month. Paul Edmonds will be by for that. NHL news and notes. And we're going to kick off this hour by letting you know this segment is brought to you by Olympic Building Center, and it is with our good friend from TSN 1200 in Ottawa, Mr. Ian Mendez. Good morning, Ian. How are you?
Hey, guys. Doing great. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Are you sending a resume to the Green Bay Packers?
Holy cow. Does that not just shift the entire dynamics of the NFC with that one singular play where, I think I heard best case scenario, he might be able to come back late December, but for all intents and purposes, he's out for the season. And it's amazing, right? Because, and I was thinking about this last night, I said, is Aaron Rodgers the most important player to his franchise in all of sports? And I thought, maybe that's going a little bit too far, but then I was thinking about it. I said, you know what? Maybe after LeBron James and what LeBron James means to Cleveland in terms of being a player and you take him out, how that team looks when that player is out, boy, I think I'm putting Aaron Rodgers second on the list after LeBron James. Like, this is a massive injury that I don't know that the Packers are going to be able to respond from this. And all of a sudden, I think if you're Carson Wentz, Doug Peterson, and the Philadelphia Eagles, and you're sitting there at 5-1, I think you're the class of the NFC, and I think you're looking at everybody else in the NFC, and you're thinking, this thing's wide open. Like, you look at the other teams, like the Rams, if I'm not mistaken, the Rams are in first place, the Vikings are in first place, and the Eagles are in first place. And I'm not sure 6 weeks into the season, a lot of people would have said that those would be your kind of front runners in the NFC. So this has been, I think, a massive turn of events, and the Packers, at 4-2, they're going to be super lucky to keep their heads above water here and maybe try to get to 9-7 and maybe scrape their way into the playoffs. But this is a massive turn of events for the entire NFC.
The Sens roll into Alberta over the weekend and they win combined 6-0 against the Flames, 6-1 against Edmonton. Roll through Alberta and just cause all kinds of trouble. You see that coming?
No, and I don't think anybody did. And what's amazing, you were just talking about the importance of a player to his franchise there with LeBron and Aaron Rodgers. I think a lot of people would have put Eric Karlsson kind of near the top of the list in terms of the hockey world, what that player means to the team. And here's Ottawa, 5 games in, guys, and they've got points in all 5 games. I think them in L.A., I think that the Sens and the Kings are the only teams in the NHL without a regulation loss, meaning they've picked up points in every game. And I think a lot of people thought when Ottawa would start the season without Karlsson, they'd be very lucky to win 1 or 2 games out of 5. And, okay, they've only won 3 out of 5, but they've been able to scrape out points in the other ones. And the manner in which they won those games on the weekend, I think that's what's most jarring, is that they've never swept that Western Canadian road trip involving those 3 teams, Vancouver, Edmonton, Calgary. So to do it without Karlsson, and then to outscore the opposition, I think it was 15-3 overall, it's mind-blowing. And to beat the Oilers in the second of the back-to-back when you had played the night before, and to smoke them 6-1 in their building, I think a lot of people are woke up Sunday and Monday thinking, what's wrong with the Edmonton Oilers? Like, they came out, they won that opening night game against Calgary. McDavid had a hat trick, and I think people were saying, wow, they're legitimately a Stanley Cup contender. I think the Vegas odds makers had them as the favorite to win the Cup out of the West. I think if you reassessed it right now, and we're only, 10, 12 days into the season, I think a lot of people would say that there's some red flags around the Oilers, and I think the Senators may have exposed some of those on Saturday night.
Yeah, and I not only that, but given the week they had with Todd McCullough and the bag skating and the harsh words he criticized his team, and then to come out with an effort like that again, it is a curious thing going on in Edmonton. Ian, I want to know more about Thomas Chabot. Great world junior, great junior career. Didn't make the team out of camp, but he's back and he's putting up points. What's your thoughts on him in the future with the Senators this season?
Well, he gets sent right back down to the minors last night, which is kind of a good news, bad news scenario for the Senators. The good news is, I think by sending Thomas Chabot back down to the American Hockey League last night, it opens the door for Eric Karlsson to come back Tuesday. That's our read in the situation, that Chabot's return means Karlsson is ready to go. So that's the good news. The bad news is, I think if you're an Ottawa fan and you watch this kid, and while he wasn't logging a ton of minutes, he's so silky smooth, and at 20 years old, he showed on the weekend that he can run a professional power play pretty effectively. And Ottawa's power play heading into this stretch of games on the weekend was the worst in the league. I think they were 0-16, and Chabot comes in and helps quarterback the power play. He is so smooth with the puck and such a smooth skater. The issue that Guy Boucher and the team seems to have on him, they feel like he's not quite ready to defend at the National Hockey League level. It's too bad. I mean, they kind of sheltered his minutes here a little bit, but I thought by kickstarting the power play and showing that he can move the puck, I thought that there would be a space for him. But I still suspect we see him at some point this season. We see him come back, and I would even think at some point this season he comes back and he's just a permanent fixture on this team, but held his own ground here in Alberta in those 2 games.
Ian, Habs fans are saying it's early, but man, when you watch them and follow them, and I know like their shooting percentage is at 4 or something like that, 4%, but it looks like they're in serious trouble. Your thoughts on just where the Canadiens are at right now?
Well, they've won 1 out of 5, right? And I guess the good news for them is they at least scraped out a point against the Leafs on the weekend, because I think there was a lot of people thinking Toronto might go in there and blow the doors off the Habs, which would just create an ultimate sense of panic at the Bell Center. If they went in and Matthews, Marner, Nylander and company went in there and beat them 5-1 or something, that people would press the panic button. But, you know, they hung pretty tough with Toronto. And Carey Price, I didn't think was his best on Saturday night. And I think that's what's a little bit alarming here. I know they've only scored, I think it's 8 goals in 5 games, but Carey Price used to be able to bail them out of some situations. And so far, and it's a small sample size, but so far this season, he hasn't. And I didn't love his reaction to the Austin Matthews goal, the first Austin Matthews goal, where he was just kind of caught off balance. I understand Austin Matthews has, I think, probably a top 5 or 6 release in the game in terms of shooting, but Carey Price looked very awkward on that. And I don't know. I think if you're a Habs fan, the only thing I would try to say to you to give you a little bit of solace is, remember last year, and I think it was 2 years ago as well, they came out of the gates on fire. And if I'm not mistaken, last year they were like, I think it took them until the middle of November until they lost 3 games in regulation time. And people were planning the parade. People were saying, this team's unbelievable. And they just literally fell off the edge of a cliff. And they hung on by their fingernails to make the playoffs. They ended up winning the division. But they were in a complete, utter free fall, I think, in January and February of last year after having a great start to the season. So we've seen this act in Montreal where an October record doesn't necessarily paint the picture for what's going to happen to you later in the year. But I think there's a significant amount of angst in that marketplace about a team that has, you know, on the back end especially, they've gotten rid of Subban, Markov, you know, a couple of other guys, Emelin, that were sort of mainstays on the back end for years. And now it's a little bit of a patchwork situation. And now you've won 1 out of 5 games. And all the naysayers that said you were in for a bad year are having a good chuckle. They just need Carey Price to steal them some games and give them some confidence, because that can do a world of difference for that team.
Ian Mendes in Ottawa joining us this morning on the Big Show on the Royal Sports Power Hour, 14 minutes past the hour on TSN 1290. What's the thoughts in that city around the Red Blacks having Trevor Harris back, and as we creep closer to the playoffs, hosting the Grey Cup, and what the Red Blacks could potentially do once they do make the playoffs?
Well, you know, it's funny that they actually clinched a playoff spot on Friday night when it didn't look all that great for them to do so, because, first of all, Hamilton was playing Calgary. They needed the Ticats to lose, and it looked like that game was going to go to overtime until Calgary got a very fortunate break at the end of the regulation that allowed them to kick a field goal and win that game at the last second. And then the Red Blacks are playing the late game Friday night, and they're at Mosaic in Regina, and they're down by 12 points with 4 minutes left in that game. And they're in punt formation to punt the football. And you're thinking, you know, when they have those statistical probabilities, you know, they sort of run the numbers on what your probability is to win. I'd love to know what the Red Blacks' odds of winning the game were. Down by 12, ready to punt with 4 minutes left in the fourth quarter, I think it would be for sure less than 5% chance of winning. And they ended up coming back to win that game. And Trevor Harris did an excellent job of shaking off some first half jitters where I don't think he looked very good, but shaking it off and all of a sudden driving this team down for a couple of touchdowns at the end of the game, and Ryan Lindley punched it in as time expired for the win. And it's amazing because the Red Blacks won 1 out of 8 games, guys, to start the season. And I know that makes people really sick in the West when a team that won 1 of their first 8 games is in the playoffs already. But here we are. Not only are they in the playoffs, they still have a chance to win the division because the Argos have a game in hand, but the Red Blacks have 1 game left because of the quirky nature of their schedule. They have 2 bye weeks in the next 3 weeks. Like, it's very odd that you would have 2 bye weeks to end the season out of 3, but that's where the Red Blacks are at. There's a scenario here, guys, if they can somehow win the division, they'd only play 1 game in about 5 weeks, which I don't know if that's good or if that's bad, but they'd certainly be healthy. They might be rusty, but here they are. They're poised to win the division. I mean, technically they're in first place right now, but the Argos have that game in hand. It's utterly remarkable to me that a team that won 1 of their first 8 games is sitting in first place in the East Division, but that probably speaks more to the sort of ineptitude of the division more than anything else.
Great stuff, Ian. Thanks for your time, and enjoy the rest of your week.
All right, Tim, to you guys.
Thanks so much, man. Take care, Ian.
And that was Mr. Ian Mendez of TSN 1200 in Ottawa. Always good to talk to him. This segment was a presentation of Olympic Buildings. Buildings straightforward or complex, it's what they do best. Tour their projects at olympic-buildings.ca. Your first chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas is next on The Big Show on the Royal Sports Power Hour, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Ring those phones, 780-1290. 12th caller through will be our first qualifier of the week as TSN 1290 and redtag.ca present Hockey Nights in Vegas. We're sending five lucky listeners and their guests to Las Vegas this November, where they'll see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Las Vegas Golden Knights on Friday, November the 10th at T-Mobile Arena. We'll supply return airfare to and from Las Vegas. Free parking at Winnipeg Richardson International Airport, courtesy of Park and Fly. Two hockey tickets to the Jets and the Golden Knights, November 10th at T-Mobile Arena. Four nights accommodations right on the strip and $1,290 in cash to help cover a few extras during your stay. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays on The Big Show at 7:15 a.m. and again at 8:15 a.m. Then on the Don Vito Roundtable with Mr. Kevin Oshevsky at 12:15 p.m. And on the afternoon ride with Andrew Hustler-Patterson and Rick Ralph at 5:15 p.m. You can also watch for bonus chances to qualify online, including on our TSN 1290 Facebook page. Winners will be announced Monday mornings right here on The Big Show. Our next grand prize announcement is coming up on October 23rd, and our final one will be on Monday, November the 6th. For more information, check out tsn1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas. Presented by redtag.ca, where Canada shops for great travel deals, and us here at TSN 1290. Mr. Ruwicki, our first qualifier of the week and our 12th caller through is?
It is Terry DeLong.
Terry DeLong, how are you, sir?
Very good, and you?
Good, thank you. Did it take you DeLong to get through?
Very DeLong, yes. Never well, heard that one before.
Well, congratulations. We're glad you finally made it through. And you have qualified just for doing so this morning. You get a Jets Gear gift card, so congratulations on that. And you're in for our next two grand prize draws. If you don't win on great. October the 23rd, your name is still in for the November 6th final draw. Do you know who you might be taking to Sin City with you if you win?
Yeah, I got to take my son.
Ah.
Yeah.
How old is he?
He's 30.
Great.
Yeah,
that'd be fun.
Deal. If he got through, then he'd take me, and if I got through, I'd take him. So,
well, there you go.
Fun, man.
I like the way you double down. It's like when you both buy a 50-50, and it's like, do we just get steak sandwiches, or are we splitting this? Have you been to Vegas before?
No, I haven't.
Oh, that's outstanding.
I wanted to go.
Excellent. Good stuff. Sure. And what do you think of the Golden Knights so far? Are they 4-0 now with Subban's win?
4-1.
4-1.
Yeah. 4-1, eh?
Yeah.
Wow. Doing great, eh?
Jets 3-2, three games in a row.
Yeah, they're looking better.
What a difference a week makes, Terry.
No kidding, eh?
I've been saying that my whole life. Wait one more week. You never know what could happen.
Exactly.
We really appreciate listening to TSN 1290, and we congratulate you on winning the Jets Gear gift card and for qualifying. Wish you the best of luck for the grand prize draws.
Thank you very much.
Good luck longer.
Okay. Figure.
Terry DeLong is our latest qualifier. We'll do it again at 8:15 right here on The Big Show. And then Kevin Oshevsky will have your opportunity on the Don Vito Roundtable, 12:15, 5:15 on the afternoon ride with Huss and Rick. Do we have a comment from Mr. Paul Maurice about the win 2-1 against Carolina Hurricanes on Saturday night?
Good to get to the third period and be able to get it back. You got to have, you know, this one was circled on the calendar right from the start of the year with the style of game that the Carolina plays. And I don't know that I thought we moved the puck exactly as unusually as we did through two periods. But even with all of that being maybe hard to watch, the structure in the end net front was pretty good. So we didn't we didn't give up a whole heck of a lot there, and we were pretty good in the third. But, you know, from where we were a week ago to where we are now in terms of handling that on the bench, and everybody knew they were off. You could feel it in the morning skate. You know, they're dragging themselves around, and they knew it's going to be that kind of game. But they stuck with it. Like, they stayed in it, and they did find a way to get better, and that's a really good sign.
Can I pee on this a little bit?
Well, I don't want you to pee on it, but you can talk about it.
Penalty kill sucks, and they got to change it. It's early. You're 30th in the penalty kill in the NHL. It is so ridiculously passive and far, like, deep the way they collapse. And you see some of the teams out there, the way Pittsburgh, and not the pressure that they play, right? They're calling it a pressure kills, and just the suffocation that you're watching some of the teams out there. Power play gets the puck, bam, a guy's on him right away. And just the way they swirl around and remove time and space, it is night and day from what the Jets are doing out there. And if the Jets don't change what they're doing, that penalty kill is going to be one big, massive anchor around their neck.
1-for-4 against Carolina.
Yeah, well, and you don't even have to look around the league. Look what the other team was sporting Saturday night. The Hurricanes, for years now, I've had. I know last year they were first in penalty kill, and they were similar that the year prior to that. And it's, I really think it's all centered around aggressiveness.
Yep.
I don't even want to say the word anymore because we've been pounding it for so many days and a couple of weeks into the season here. But you're just not going to be able to block every single, like, if that's your main goal, you're going to fail in trying to block every shot that gets toward either Hellebuck or Mason. At some point, they have to be more aggressive towards the puck carrier and try and force other teams into making quick mistakes. And it's what teams do to the Jets, and it's why they've struggled so far. But for whatever reason, Winnipeg is just averse to doing that early on.
And it's not just aggressive in their own defensive zone. And you see the Jets be fairly aggressive through the neutral zone in applying, and then they sort of fall into this different mindset or snap over in their D zone. But right starting with the breakout, you're seeing teams just hassle the guy in the offensive zone on the penalty kill and sometimes delaying zone entry for 15 seconds because other teams are having trouble set up with their exit and that sort of thing. Just what the Jets are doing is almost mirrored opposite of what you see the successful clubs in the NHL doing right now.
We got to take a break, but when we come back, the voice of the Jets, Paul Edmonds, weighs in on the discussion here on the Royal Sports Power Hour on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca, and the Royal Sports Power Hour. Your NHL news and notes are still to come. We're going to go around the standings after one full week in the National Hockey League and take a look at some things and talk about anything and everything else on concerning the hockey world. Of course, Winnipeg Jets with a 2-1 victory over the Carolina Hurricanes on Saturday. They now get set. They had the day off yesterday. They'll practice today, get set to host the Columbus Blue Jackets on Tuesday night, and they will host the Minnesota Wild on Friday night before heading out on the road. To talk about it here on the Big Show, the voice of the Winnipeg Jets on TSN 1290, Mr. Paul Edmonds. Good morning, Paul.
Morning, Jimbo.
How are you?
I'm pretty good.
All right.
Not bad. Yeah.
Okay, have a good one. Take care.
Yeah, no. Actually, I'm a little chapped. I watched the Cubs game last night, and I didn't, I'm a big Joe Madden fan and a big Cubs fan, and I didn't like the way things got handled with the bullpen and John Lackey in the ninth inning last night. Justin Turner made them pay, and now they're down 0-2 heading home to Wrigley. So, you know.
Got them right where they want them, Paulie, right?
Well, I guess so. I mean, that's the one thing, too, about baseball. It's kind of like curling. The ultimate second-guessing sport, right? When you're sitting there, oh, I wouldn't have done that. I wouldn't have put him in. I would have made that move. You know, I would have bunted here. But, you know, I watched the news conference last night after the game with Joe Madden, and he was peppered with questions about how he handled things. You know, the one thing I've learned over my very illustrious and lucrative career is that, you know, managers and coaches, when you ask them about why they made decisions in-game, they usually have a very plausible answer. And Joe Maddon did last night with bringing John Lackey in and why Wade Davis was still in the bullpen and not used as a supreme closer. And, you know, why they let Lackey face Justin Turner last night. And Justin Turner made them pay. So, you know, that's the one good thing about sports is managers and coaches always seem to know what they're doing. And they always have a very good answer as to why they made a move in game. So, you know, who am I to second guess anybody? But as a Cubs fan, I kind of thought it might have been the wrong move at the time. Who knows?
Well, I'm glad you started with that because I was going to ask you about it, given the fact you are a Cubs fan and your vast baseball knowledge as well. By the way, this segment with Paul is brought to you by Gauthier Chevrolet and McPhillips, where for a month of September, or October rather, get 0% financing on most new vehicles and get a Vegas vacation for two included. Gauthier Chevrolet, 1400 McPhillips at Inkster. I thought Paul Maurice's assessment of the game on Saturday was pretty bang on with the fact they couldn't make passes and it wasn't the prettiest thing, but they won that. Those are games in the past when they go that fashion. The Jets haven't always won, Paul.
You know, Jim, that is absolutely bang on. It was not a Picasso. Paul Maurice said before the game that he was a little bit worried about it just because you're coming off the West Coast and you almost treat it like it's another road game. You haven't quite settled in here. You've been home, but you haven't really been home because you get off the plane at 3 in the afternoon. The next day, you're playing again. So, you know, he wondered exactly how it was going to unfold, but you worry about it. And that's the kind of game that the Winnipeg Jets would find a way to lose in the past and have to answer a bunch of questions. Instead, they find a way to win that game, and that's what a good team will do, or good teams will do, or teams that are building toward being better will do, and that's find an ultimate way to win a hockey game like that when it's not exactly the most efficient game that they've ever played in terms of how they want to handle it tactically. You know, I mean, they didn't get many shots, and certainly they didn't generate a lot of offense, but there were spurts in the game where they had a chance to score goals and they had a chance to open it up, and certainly their goaltender was good, and again, defensively they were good, and special teams were okay, and you know, they just found a way to kind of grind through it, and I guess because of that, it was rather impressive. You know, it wasn't the most entertaining game, but they won it, and I think that there'd be certainly a lot more questions had they not found a way to get the 2 points. In whatever fashion they did, as it turned out, it was in regulation, then had they lost. So, you know, I guess kudos to them. As Dennis Bediak always likes to say, never really critique the wins, but certainly from that standpoint, it wasn't a great game, but one that certainly the Winnipeg Jets had to have and found a way to get.
A delicate and important decision with who Paul Maurice is going to put in between the pipes when you got Connor Hellebuyck rolling at a real nice clip and you got Steve Mason maybe starting to get a little bit of mold on him and sitting on the bench as long as he has.
Boy, isn't that the $10,000 question right now? How do you handle this? I mean, I'm wondering today if at practice there's any revealing of which goaltender is going to go tomorrow. I think you can make an argument, Westy, for either one. For the circumstances and the situation that the Winnipeg Jets are in. But I would not be surprised if Connor Hellebuyck got the start again. This is a franchise that we've talked about leading up to this season. And they've even sort of embraced this philosophy as well and been quite revealing about it. And that is that this is a very important year. This is a year where they want to make the playoffs. They want to move forward. They understand that their star players, either on the back end or at the forward core, are ready to challenge, to move forward in the postseason. Not just get there, but win a few games in the playoffs and maybe win a round and push on into the later stages of April and maybe into May and who knows, June. And then with that, they've talked about getting off to a good start, and a good start is going to help buoy them through the through the 82-game regular season and points count as much now as they do, say, in November and in January and then in March in that push. So in thinking all of that and in understanding all of that and then in believing in all of that, you would probably point to Connor Hellebuyck as the hot hand right now. And why wouldn't you ride him for a chance for a fourth straight win and get your record to two games above 500 and at this point give your team the best chance to win? But as you say, you've got this other guy that, I mean, was the number one goaltender going into training camp, was the number one goaltender going into the regular season, started the first two games, and has started to get a little bit of dust on him from being on the shelf. So also it's a former team of his coming in Columbus. So maybe this is a real good opportunity to work him in with the limited number of games that you're playing right now. You know, again, you can make an argument for either side. I don't know how this is going to go, but it will be the top question on the end of everybody's tongue today going into practice, whether Paul Maurice tells us the answer to the question today, or if he makes us wait tomorrow, I'm not sure. But I don't know which way you would go. Knowing what I've said and knowing exactly how I've laid this out, and we understand the Winnipeg Jets to be and want this year, I think it's Connor Hellebuyck's net. But I could be wrong.
And fair, and I agree, fair to say, and I don't know either, Paul, but fair to say that each will get a game this week? Like, I would think that you can't, even if it is Hellebuyck's net on Tuesday, and it would not surprise me at all, he deserves it, that you have to get Mason back in. You can't let him go, like, 14 days without a start. Or can you?
Well, we looked back historically, and, I mean, Archer Zerbe ran, you know, something, some incredible number, like 40-something straight games in Carolina one year under Paul Maurice. I mean, this isn't about, you know, coddling anybody or making sure that somebody feels really good about themselves or anything like that or stroking egos. This year for this team is about winning games, and it's about getting to the playoffs. It's about satisfying the need the organization has within itself and certainly making sure that the fans feel that and come along for the ride. So, you know, in saying that, I mean, do you just go with a guy because he needs some work, or do you go with a guy because you feel that that guy gets you the best chance to get the 2 points? I guess that's why Paul Maurice is in the situation he's in. He's been through this before several times. I guess he'll weigh all that out. We'll find out either today or tomorrow. But for me, again, it's an argument that could be made both sides. But I just think that Connor Hellebuyck is playing so well right now, and the team is playing so well in front of him, that if you want to make sure that you get maybe the best chance to win right now, he would be the guy that you point to and ask to take the net. Understandably, you want to get Steve Mason some work and really have a real good 1-2 punch at some point if you can. You know, until you lose the net, I think you should be the guy, but I could be wrong.
Paulie, special teams was a big question mark coming into this season for the possible positive contribution they could make to the Jets scratching and clawing their way above the playoff line. The penalty kill right now is at 30%. I watch with a sharp eye other teams that have solid penalty kills, and the level of aggression that they employ is remarkable. And Mike Sullivan coming out calling their penalty kill a pressure kill, and seeing how Pittsburgh, Ottawa, the Kings, Knights, Wings, Flames, Hurricanes, those teams just suffocate other teams the second they get the puck, and they sort of rotate around and go man in the D zone. It's so different from what the Jets are doing. How married do you think this coaching staff is to their passive penalty kill at this point in time?
Well, Rusty, we've kind of talked about this and touched on it before. It looks passive at times, but it's also very aggressive at times. One of the things that they're not doing this year that they've done in the past is they're not getting up the ice and really pressuring up the ice. Paul Maurice felt that it was wearing the penalty killers down by having puck pursuits up the ice. So what he's done is he's gone softly up the ice and allowed the teams to come through the neutral ice with that drop, but he stacked up the blue line. So if you watch the penalty kill tomorrow night, you're going to watch four guys across that blue line and stack it up at their own line, and they're going to be very aggressive at that point. And as a result, they're going to try to knock a puck away, get a loose puck, a 50-50 puck, win that battle, and then transition to try to get an opportunity to score a goal. I'm not saying that's the first priority, is to try to score a goal when you're down by a man. But going into the other night, they were second overall in shorthanded goals next to New Jersey, who has three, and they had two. And when we look back at last year, they had a number of shorthanded goals to the point where they were one of the top teams in shorties as well. So it can provide a little bit of offense from that standpoint there. And then, of course, if they don't get that puck or that loose puck at the blue line, when they are aggressive, then they do retreat a little bit until they can maybe turn over or create a loose puck inside their zone. So there are moments where it is passive or looks that way, but there are varying moments where it's very aggressive as well. So, you know, so far, I think in the last couple of games, it's been much better than it had at the start of the year. The numbers might be a little bit skewed because of that. So maybe just let's give it a few more games or another week or two to see if the numbers come into balance a little bit and that number goes up from where it is right now. But, you know, I see what they're doing. I see when it works. It works really well. And certainly understanding it a little bit more and then watching it the last few games, I think that it's worked a lot better than it has at the start of the year. So I guess we'll see where it goes. The one thing for me is, when they put Scheifele and Weaver on the penalty kill, it seems to work a lot better. But you can't run those guys with those minutes and add those minutes onto those guys for the whole 82-game schedule. So what you're also trying to do here is develop a few more guys on the bottom six into much better penalty killers than they have been, and embrace that role and be more adept at that role. So while they're still employing something a little bit different systematically on their penalty kill, they're also trying to get a few more guys that can fill the need on the penalty kill so that you don't have to run Wheeler and Scheifele out there and add those minutes to their overall game minutes in-game and then have those stack up as the games go along into the extra minutes and blocking shots and maybe risking themselves an injury in that situation. So they're trying to get a few more guys to move in there, but for the time being and over the course of this three-game win streak, Paul Maurice has asked some of his top players to kill some penalties, and it's worked so far.
We got to run, Paul, but expect some updates on Adam Lowry, Matthew Perreault, and Dmitry Kulikov at practice today?
Yeah, I would think so. Not a whole lot was mentioned about them. We'll see if it's still a day-to-day with Adam Lowry, and then, of course, the status of the two guys that left the game the other night on Saturday night. We'll see about a defenseman, as you mentioned, in Kulikov, and then a top six left winger in Matthew Perreault. So, and then, of course, if they can't go, who factors in will also be interesting. Or if, in fact, on the forward court, maybe they call somebody up from Manitoba Moose. We'll wait to see about that today and then subsequently tomorrow as well.
We're out of time, but Paul did want me to tell you, Troy, that the Astros are going to sweep the Yankees.
Whoa,
so we got to go. We got to go. Thanks for this, Paul.
I have no problem with that.
Thanks, Paulie. Take care, man.
The voice of the Winnipeg Jets here on TSN 1290, Mr. Brother. Paul Edmonds. Have a great day, Paul. Your NHL news and notes are next, and we come back to the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back with your NHL news and notes on the Big Show on the Royal Sports Power Hour. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki. Marshall Ferguson going to talk some CFL with us next hour. Craig Button's going to be by to talk some hockey and another chance for you to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas. Gentlemen, the Edmonton Oilers are 1-3 after winning the first game of the season.
I just wanted to add before that, did you see the Austin Matthews goal against the Habs?
Yes.
Gee whiz. I think it knocked off McDavid finally for the moment or the highlight of the night. I was just wondering if you guys saw it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was filthy. And to make Carey Price of all goalies look like that both of his goals. I saw James Royal tweet this out this morning, but Austin Matthews, since the start of last season, he's only behind Sidney Crosby for goals in the NHL.
Well, let's start there because I wanted to talk Oilers. Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews, Pierre Maguire, NBC analyst, said a few weeks ago, or I guess a week ago, Connor McDavid is the only player he thinks could score 82 goals in 82 games.
I don't think anybody can. I think that's crazy talk.
That might be, because I don't know if anybody can actually be a goal-per-game player, but I don't think Connor McDavid, if it is possible, is the only one in the league that can do that.
And he said that when he, after the freakout, like, there's not much overreaction there, right, Pierre? He gets a hattie, and McGuire freaks out like that. Nobody's going to score 82 freaking goals. Come on. I mean, Sid led last year with 44. Someone's going to go that nuclear.
I like Sid for being Sid for his skill, but everything else that he brings to the table. But are not Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid, could they not literally be more skilled than Sidney Crosby?
Well, yeah. Well, there you start measuring, you know, to try and measure that. There's no doubt. No, I don't think, because of the speed, what he does with the puck at the speed that he operates at, when you're talking skill, I don't know that there's a comparable right now to Connor McDavid. But Austin Matthews, and I think it's fair to say Austin Matthews resembles Sid much more than Connor McDavid does from a 200-foot-type perspective, right?
Yeah.
Like, Sid is so superior to McDavid defensively. That's the thing about Sid. When we say, well, who's the best player in the game right now? Well, if you're going to start a 7-game playoff series, would anybody? I mean, maybe you're drunk on offense, but there's no way in the world that I'd pick anybody but Sid. But Matthews, what Matthews is going to grow into is still a massive unknown. And in a real positive way, like, yeah. Goodness only knows what he might morph into or eventually grow into.
Yeah, just how cool would it be, too, to have some kind of international tournament that would pit Canada's best star against America's best star? If only there was something that existed like that. That would be awesome.
I know that number 29 here is awesome, but is there any doubt that number one, number two, that they got that right?
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Yep.
Nothing wrong with that.
The Edmonton Oilers are 1-3. They have 8 goals for, 14 against. They're now, after a week of being reamed out by head coach Todd McLellan and having a couple of very physical conditioning practices, drop a game at home to Ottawa and are now talking about, from Patrick Maroon, being simple with the game and playing a more speed game. McLellan daily talks about how these guys, the difference between playing the way they can to win and just expecting to win. Are you concerned about the Oilers at 1-3?
As far as them, I think there's legitimate concern when you look at the depth of the Oilers. And we all know, to the degree that Connor McDavid, how he's basically this, like, the sun in that universe, where their level of team success was so, so absolutely tied on to what Connor McDavid and his specific line did. But I think you've got to be a little bit concerned with the lack of depth, the fact that Draisaitl's out right now. Yeah, I think there's reason to be concerned about, and especially if you wanted, what were the Oilers, the second favorite to win the Stanley Cup, and all the high Bulldog, regard, yeah. And myself, I was drinking the Kool-Aid as well. But I think when you take a good look at their depth, I think there's reason to be concerned a little bit about where they're at.
I'm not concerned at all. They're currently owning a 60% shot share right now, which is tops in the NHL, and Cam Talbot has an 80 save percentage.
Didn't the Penguins teach you last year what that means?
Just joking. I don't give me. But like, realistically, though, right? Like, 5 games in, all the signs point to this being a good team. It's just a matter of everything kind of reversing over. Like, Cam Talbot's going to get back to somewhere 915, 920, and the Oilers are going to start burying some of their chances. So I wouldn't be concerned at all right now.
That's the, you know, guys know the top 2 teams in the NHL for Corsi right now? Edmonton and
Montreal. Of course he's dead.
Of course he's dying a slow death.
Enough said for me. Thank you. We'll take a break and come back with Marshall Ferguson, the Tiger Cats play-by-play man. Delvin is some CFL. Craig Button at the bottom of the hour. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Oh. Back on the big show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca, hour number three with Jim Tilt, Troy Westwood, and Mr. Brandon Rewicki. Bottom of the hour, we got Mr. Craig Button to talk some hockey with us. We're going to tee up the phone lines as well, an hour of your phone calls on the Boss Pizza fan line, another chance to qualify for our Hockey Nights in Vegas. Want to remind you to stream us on the iHeartRadio app and all your favorite devices, or get a customized playlist to suit your mood or activity. Your music, your station's always free. Download the iHeartRadio app today and stream on. We're welcoming back into the program a big part of TSN 1150 in Hamilton and the Tiger Cats play-by-play man, Mr. Marshall Ferguson. Good morning, sir.
Guys, how are we?
We're good, thank you. We're good. We're wondering if maybe Johnny Manziel's not going to go to the Tiger Cats now, and he'll go to the Green Bay Packers and win a Super Bowl.
I was.
Could you imagine?
In Hamilton this morning, about who are they going to call for the Green Bay Packers? Man, that's a tough situation to be in. And I think, like, just us as football guys that enjoy being able to watch high quality play, it sucks to not have Aaron Rodgers in a game for the remainder of the season. Like, there's not a lot that I love about the current state of NFL football. I think it's a lot of just kind of boring check downs and short little stuff. And Aaron Rodgers is one of those players that makes you really, like, he's destination viewing. You tune in to watch him like you do, you know, Mike Riley, Bo Levi, Mitchell, Matt Nichols at times. And I haven't seen a guy that really makes you jump out of your seat all that much like Aaron Rodgers this year. So it's unfortunate. But, yeah, I wonder who will give him a call.
Marshall, the Bombers lose Maurice Leggett with an Achilles. It looks like they're going to lose Darvin Adams for a little bit. We know they've got some decent depth at receiver, and the offense should be able to be okay going forward. But on your weakest phase of your team defensively, to lose arguably their best player, that's going to be covering up for Maurice Leggett or finding a diamond in the rough for someone to come in and take up that role. That's going to be tough.
Yeah, and the strength of that Winnipeg defense as well is obviously Mo Leggett has been so damn good at being able to create turnovers and be the heart and soul of what they're doing there with Taylor Lawler in the back end of that secondary. And I love the way that he's been used as a pressure guy this year as well off the edge at that Sam linebacker spot, Troy. But the thing that I come back to with Winnipeg is that it's the sum of the parts that makes that defense so good, in my opinion. Like, I know that you're not the biggest fan necessarily of some of their linebacker play in a couple of positions, but if you are, and I always look at things from my quarterbacking perspective from when I was in university, and my perspective on playing against that Winnipeg defense would be I would break the huddle, and I would look into the boundary, and I would see Chris Randall and TJ Heath, and I would go, yeah, I'm good. I don't really want to go over there. I would look at the free safety spot, and I would see Taylor Loeffler can cover a lot of ground and can get really physical, and I would probably say, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to challenge that guy all that much. The middle linebacker, Sam Hurl, yeah, I might give him a look. Like, he's the type of guy that if you're going to pick a weak link in that defense, maybe you'll go there. But I like Santos Knox at the Will spot. I liked Mo Leggett at that Sam spot. But when you take away one of those pieces, it's kind of like when you're playing Jenga, right? You pull out one of the wood sticks, and all of a sudden the Sam linebacker spot isn't as scary, which means maybe your screen game can get better against that Sam linebacker spot. Maybe that makes your field halfback position a little bit more dependent on trying to get involved in the run game, because your backup Sam linebacker isn't going to be as good at getting involved in the run game. So everything is connected in a defense. I think that's what makes football kind of special. That's what makes team defense special. And Mo Leggett, it's a loss for sure. He's really fun to watch. Even though he's victimized the Tiger Cats, it feels like every time that they've played against he's kind of the Kenny Ladler of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Because Kenny Ladler, every time that the Tiger Cats play against Edmonton, he ends up with a pick in the fourth quarter. Mo Leggett's been that guy against Hamilton, but he's been that guy against a lot of teams. So, again, it's unfortunate. It's not the same exact thing as Aaron Rodgers, where it's like he's a player that makes you get out of your seat at the quarterback spot. But Mo Leggett is a difference maker on that defense, and it's a really unfortunate loss for a team that's trying to peak heading towards the colder weather here.
That is a tough loss for the Hamilton Tiger Cats against Calgary, and an even tougher loss in my mind for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders to the Ottawa Red Blacks. Your thoughts on both?
Yeah, the Ottawa team against the Riders, I think, when you end up with like six field goals as they did, I know that makes Troy very happy, but when you do that for the Riders, it's just you put yourself in a bad spot. I didn't really love the way that they approached the game either, guys. I got to be honest, Trent Richardson to me right now feels like a distraction, and I know that that's going to make a lot of people in Saskatchewan very grumpy with me because they vehemently defend anybody who was wearing a green S helmet on the side of it. But like, to me, they're putting in things in that offense that they don't really need and that aren't really accomplishing anything other than appeasing a guy that they brought in that very clearly is excited to be a rental to try and be here and show that he can run downhill. Trent Richardson, in his first couple of games, has had one run where he has looked like somebody who is a top NFL draft pick that comes up to the CFL and should just demolish everybody in front of him. It was the downhill 15-yard run where he met Antoine Pruneau right in the hole and just ran through Pruneau like he didn't exist. I expected to see that from Richardson one out of every four or five times he touched the football. I haven't. And when they ran that wedge play on short yardage where they're just going to dive forward, I'm like, man, Keenan LaFrance gives you everything that you need at the running back spot. I don't know why they're trying to really go with this experiment of using Richardson, and maybe they grind out a game or two. Maybe he's a difference maker in a playoff game when it gets cold out, but I just don't really see it. And so I thought that the Riders, you know, they did some weird things on offense that they didn't really need to. They didn't finish when they had scoring opportunities, and so that's why they fell into a hole they did. I give full marks to Trevor Harrison and Jamie Elizondo for designing their offense the way they have and being able to fight their way back into that game. In terms of the Tiger Cats, it's just the story of the whole season. It's kind of, you want to go micro with it, you can talk just about the game. You want to go macro, you can talk the fact that this game is a microcosm of what they've been experiencing all season, which is shooting yourself in the foot, taking penalties at bad times, having turnovers when you don't need them, and it's just a combination of things that lead you to a spot where they are officially out of the playoff race with three games to go. Now, if you hold Jerome Messon down to the amount of rushing yards that they did in this ball game, you should have absolutely beaten the Calgary Stampeders. You hold Paul Levi Mitchell to 7 of 17, I think he was in the first half, and yet you don't come away with a sizable lead, like, that's an issue. That's something that you have to fix. And in the offseason, I hope, honestly, that this isn't something where they look and they just go, well, we had one game, you know, that we were right on the edge. We could have made a difference there, but we didn't, and that's why we were in the playoffs. It's a bigger picture thing. You have to be able to close out games and close out teams like Calgary when you get them on the ropes. That's the mark of a good team, being able to finish when you have an opportunity. In the Tiger Cats, just quite frankly, are not a good team right now. People might not like that, but their record shows it, and their inability to finish shows that.
Marshall, Jonathan Jennings was hot coming into the game against the Bombers, and the Bomber D was able to minimize anything that BC could do offensively. We talked to Julio Caravata before the game, and he said that their biggest problem up and down the line of scrimmage with the O-line and the D-line, looking forward to next year. How far away are the BC Lions from being a real contending team in the West?
I think they're in tough right now, Troy, in the West, and I agree with you. He was kind of warm coming in with Jonathan Jennings, but he looked very out of sorts. It's, to me, the thing that always tells me how comfortable a quarterback is feeling isn't his throwing or his, you know, his arm motion or his decision-making. It's his feet. And Jonathan Jennings' feet are all kinds of messy right now, and I think Julio's spot on when he said it's about the O-line, the D-line for that team. They're going to have to rebuild that offensive line because, like, they started the second half, guys, and I know you know it because they were in Winnipeg, but Kirby Fabian takes a procedure penalty on the first play coming out of the locker room to set the second half. I'm like, that's one of those things that bad teams do because there's no excuse for that. There's absolutely no need because, you know, it's like the Tiger Cats taking a delay of game penalty to start a drive or to start a quarter or to start a second half. It's like, you just can't do that if you're a good team. That's something that Calgary just quite simply does not do very often, and they're a really good team. So I think BC is in tough. I think Jonathan Jennings arguably has the most pure talent of any quarterback in the Canadian Football League, but he has an inability to show it because he's constantly being hit, he's being chased around, and I think they need to design something unique for him as well where they can really look at his strengths and his skill set and say, here's what we want to do with you moving forward, and we want to build like a 3-4 year plan here where, first of all, you get him under contract, then you start to build around him with all the offensive skill position players that they have. If they don't do that, it feels like Jonathan Jennings' talent is going to kind of be wasted at this point, which is hard to say knowing that he hasn't really been given a full 2-3 year opportunity, but he needs to have something built around him, similar to what Masoli's had built in Hamilton, where June Jones came in with the run and shoot, and he said, listen, here's what I do, but I'm going to shape it to your skill set, which for Masoli is running the football a whole bunch. That's made Jeremiah Masoli a much better player. It's similar to Winnipeg when I talked to you guys a couple weeks ago, where if you have a player like an Andrew Harris, Matt Nichols can become so much better because they use the strengths of Andrew Harris to make Matt Nichols look better. If you rely on just one aspect of your game where you don't have a flexible offense, your quarterback will not play as well. I think Jennings kind of falls into that category as well.
Marshall Ferguson joining us this morning on the Big Show, TSN 1290, 13 minutes past the hour. Marshall, what do you make of Jason Moss as a coach? The Eskimos get a big win on the weekend, but his sideline antics, I'm sorry, they entertain me.
I love him. I love Jason Moss. I loved him when he was in Ottawa. I was the sideline reporter for TSN 1150 Hamilton in 2015 when Moss was the offensive coordinator for the Red Blacks, and I remember kind of being taken aback at that point as he was an offensive coordinator of just how brash he was. Like, he was screaming at the Ticats sideline. He was screaming at the refs. He was running up and down. Brock Sunderland was also there at the time, and they were together on the sideline kind of getting into it with each other at one point. Like, he was so entertaining to watch, and people might not like how brash he is, but to me, it's just passion. Like, that's all that it is with Jason Moss. You can see how much he cares about the game and how much he wants to play it. And the thing that I love more than anything, guys, is that for him, it's not necessarily about, you know, sideline antics or running up and down or, you know, doing strange stuff or strange play calls. It is that he just has no filter. Like, he doesn't care what you really think. He says things in the media that other coaches in this league don't often say. He's forthcoming about how he feels about situations, whether it's last year with the CFL and TSN miking up the sideline and the players and doing the live mics, or if it is anything else. Like, he is who he is, and he wants you to know that he doesn't really care what you think. And I appreciate that, because I think there's too many people in football who are terrified of what people think of them or what they might perceive them to be, and so they never really get you never get a true statement out of them. But Moss is the exact opposite of that. So I would play really hard for that guy. Like, Troy, I don't know about you, but he feels like the type of coach that when you're going into a big game, whether it's a playoff game or the end of the regular season or anything else, that I'm like, I want to play for a guy that is that passionate and cares that much about what he does for a living.
Yeah, that's the new school thing for sure on the sidelines with Jason Moss, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Marshall, we appreciate it. Great stuff as always. Enjoy the rest of your week.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
Take care, man.
We will hear from Connor Hellebuck next, and also qualify the next person in Hockey Nights in Vegas right here on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
.780-1290 for the 12th caller through, and our latest qualifier as TSN 1290 and RedTech.ca present Hockey Nights in Vegas. We're sending 5 lucky listeners. We already have determined 3 of them, looking for 2 more, and their guests to Las Vegas this November, where they'll see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Las Vegas Golden Knights Friday, November the 10th at T-Mobile Arena. We'll supply return airfare to and from Las Vegas. Free parking at Winnipeg Richardson International Airport, courtesy of Park and Fly. 2 hockey tickets, Jets versus Golden Knights on the 10th at T-Mobile Arena, and 4 nights accommodations right on the strip at the MGM Grand Hotel. And we're going to kick in $1,290 in cash to help you cover a few extras during your stay. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays at 7:15 a.m. and 8:15 a.m. right here on The Big Show with Jim, Troy, and Brandon, and then 12:15 on the Don Vito Roundtable with Mr. Kevin Olszewski, and the afternoon ride with Andrew Patterson, the Hustler, and Mr. Rick Ralph. We'll have your chance to qualify at 5:15. You can also watch for bonus chances to qualify online. Winners will be announced Monday mornings right here on The Big Show. Our next grand prize announcement is coming up on Monday, October the 23rd, and then our 5th and final one will be announced on Monday, November the 6th. For more information, check out tsn1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas, presented by redtag.ca, where Canada shops for great travel deals, and us here at TSN 1290. Terry DeLong said it took him a long time to get through, but he got through, and should he win, he'll be taking his son. They both agreed whoever qualifies or wins would take the other one.
Hey, I had to go back to that DeLong thing that he said he heard 1,000 times, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The DeLong.
Longer!
Longy!
Good luck,
congratulations.
Man.
Good luck. And good luck to all our entrants. Once again, the next chance is at 12:15 and 5:15 today. But right now, our 12th caller through and qualifier, who will also get a Jets Gear gift card simply for doing so, is...
It is Dale Armour.
Dale Armour!
Armour!
Armor is just a good handle on its own. Yeah. We don't need a wire.
It just sounds tough, yeah. Right? That's Armor. On your nameplate. That's yeah.
Dale Armour. Good stuff. You've won a Jets Gear gift card, and you're in for our next 2 grand prize draws. Thanks for qualifying, Dale.
As opposed to Toth, for instance.
Right? Toth's good, too. Jim Toth.
It's the name.
Short, sweet, Toth. To the point.
Toth's short, kinda, sweet, to the point.
I like JT, though. I like JT more than if you went like Totesy.
J-Tizzle.
J-Tizzle.
J-Teezy.
My middle initial is T, so you could go J-T Toth.
J.T. Toth.
Thomas.
Oh.
You could be like my grandmother used to do when she was happy, say Jimmy Tom. And when she was upset, you could say James Thomas. And then you knew. Huh. I'm not getting a chocolate pudding tonight. Let's move on. Enough with my issues growing up. Let's talk about Connor Hellebuck. After 3 games so far this season, all 3 wins He has a .937 save percentage. I know. It's been three games. A 2.11 goals against average. And here's what he said after the 2-1 victory against Carolina when he was asked what specifically he worked on this summer.
Mainly I wanted to start with getting my confidence back and getting my poise back in the net. And then I got a new trainer and he was teaching me about the biomechanics and how the body moves and all that. So I was really learning how to become faster and more set and more square. And it fit perfectly for my game.
Yeah, that big soft square thing he's got down right now, huh? Great rebound control, looks in total control. And I see no reason whatsoever why you would interrupt what's going on with him here in this deciding on who plays Tuesday night. I know you got to be a little bit concerned about Mason being on the bench collecting dust since the 7th of the month, but when you got someone clipping along here like Hellebuck, I say ride that horse and give Mason either the 26th or the 27th here, so long as Hellebuck continues to play at this level.
Yeah, and he made the move to Devin Dubnyk's old trainer, and there's a lot of Devin Dubnyk in his game right now if you watch Connor Hellebuck. Just real mechanical and a good, I guess, economic movement inside the crease. And it's what we kind of expected and were told to expect from his game coming out of college and coming from the Moose, right? Like, he's not going to wow you post to post like a Fleury with his athleticism, but it has improved in terms of him being able to move side to side. And he's just real calm in the net. Like, nothing too flashy, nothing too spectacular, just nice, calm, and steady. And it's been a while. Maybe we haven't even said that for the Jets in net.
What do you guys think of the comments of the first thing he worked on was getting his confidence and poise back? Because we didn't hear that. I mean, I speculated about it, but because I saw from Connor Hellebuck, the more brash he was and the more, I don't want to say arrogant because it wasn't that, but the more confidence he spoke and had in himself and wasn't shook, the more I questioned how he actually was.
Yeah, fair. And the poise part is important, right? And that's maybe a let-in one that you would like to get, and how do you react to that, right? Instead of sort of falling apart at the seams if you are dealing with adversity in front of you. And to me, when you're – if you have a disappointing season or if there's things that occur during the season to eventually erode some level of confidence – you know, there's two ways for you to gain confidence back. One is either success, and the other is time, right? If time passes, you can kind of sift back into the place where you are mentally sort of in a natural state. And it's not like there was anything horrendous or catastrophic specifically that happened to him last year. Just maybe the slow or the steady slow erosion of underperforming and not being at the level that he wants, so that the off-season part of it, you get it with a new trainer, all those rest of those sorts of things, and that just sort of emphasizes to me the critical element of him getting off on the right foot this year. Because you could do all that, you'd do all those things training in the off-season and get back to a place where you feel confident, and confidence, like there is, I really dig confidence, right? Because there's a depth to confidence as well, where you can have, like, how thick that wall is that can't be penetrated. And I would suspect that his, when he comes back and he's saying he's confident for sure, but it's not very thick, right? There's not a lot of resiliency in his confidence. And if he would have gotten off to a rough start, I think that would have been something bordering on catastrophic for him. But to get off to the start that he did just continues to add layers and adding depth to that confidence that he's got. So it's in a great place right now. And boy, will this team benefit if he's there and if Mason looked good as well, right, outside of the number of goals on him. But his game looked sound, I thought, as well for the most part. So I think the team, in a general sense, is in a good place with what's going on between the pipes.
Well, I think you have to realize, too, that last year was the first time in his life that Hellebuck struggled at any level of hockey. Like, realistically, you look at his numbers, and it was basically perfection. The low point would have been the 920s he was putting up with the Moose in the AHL. So maybe it was also just kind of learning how to deal with adversity as well in trying to build back up his confidence. And then you work with the new trainer, and you pick up some new moves, and you pick up some new information. Then all of a sudden, you come into the year, and not only do you build back your confidence, but you're feeling almost invincible because you have all this – all these nuances that you acquired, and now it's like, okay, time to unleash this on the NHL. So I can totally understand where he's coming from.
We'll take a break and talk more Jets and more hockey when Craig Button at TSN joins us on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who is dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on The Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them soon, including this Friday on The Big Show. It's pretty simple. TSN1290.ca, nominate your nominee, and we will hopefully draw their name for a $50 Subway gift card from our friends at Subway. Eat fresh. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki with you this morning on The Big Show, TSN1290. At 9 o'clock, we'll open the Boss Pizza fan line and get your thoughts on the Jets and the Canes. The Jets' three-game winning streak. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers have clinched a playoff spot. Major League Baseball playoffs. And who you think should replace Aaron Rodgers, if anybody could. All that coming up in the Boss Pizza fan line. Up now, though, we welcome back to the program our good friend Craig Button, TSN hockey analyst. How are you, sir?
I am good, Jim. How are you?
Doing very well. Good to talk to you again, and thanks for taking some time. We'll start with...
You're talking to me this week and not last week.
Well, I don't know. I would like your thoughts on both. You know what? Let's start right there. What a difference a week can make, your impressions of the first five games for the Winnipeg Jets.
Well, I mean, it's been a tale of two seasons. I mean, those first two games were really, really poor. And, you know, I know that we tend to use words like panic. Is it time to do this or that? I mean, and one of the things, I said the same thing about the Pittsburgh Penguins that I said about the Winnipeg Jets. Bottom line is they got a lot of areas they have to improve upon. And you know what? Like, and you don't want it to slip. And that's the things that are evident. And hey, the Winnipeg Jets, you know, got to work and they did exactly what they needed to do to get their team improved. And, you know what? They went into Edmonton. I thought they played a real good game. I thought Carolina doesn't give up a lot. They played a really good, strong game, you know, coming back home. So I think the Winnipeg Jets, three straight wins. Now that's the type of team that can have success, the way they're playing. And you know, maybe Paul Maurice needed those first two games to get the players' attention. But certainly, I think that the Winnipeg Jets, their last three games have been very, very solid. And more than that, I think encouraging.
It's real early, but there are some encouraging signs, baby. Are you at all surprised or at least impressed with what you've seen from Vegas?
Well, I mean, it is early. But, I mean, one thing that you got to keep in mind is that they have Marc-Andre Fleury. And so I know Marc-Andre's hurt right now and on the injured reserve. But, you know, when you have a goaltender like Marc-Andre Fleury in the net, you're going to be able to, you know, stay in games and you're going to be able to be competitive. And, you know, you think about a team with – they don't have rookie players. They have players that have played in the NHL. And, you know, expansion teams, what I've learned with expansion teams – I know it's been a while since we've had expansion, but – these are players that are cast-offs. And there's a sense of pride that comes with it that says, hey, listen, you know what? We're still NHL players, and we're good, and we're going to show you. They have an experienced coach in Gerard Gallant, and then, you know, they have some areas on their team. You know, specifically, the area that I thought that they were really struggling was scoring. And, you know, they've been able to find a way to score goals, and I think that that's real significant. So you combine goal scoring with good goaltending and an attitude. I think it certainly you know, bodes well for the Las Vegas Golden Knights. Now that being said, you know, do I think that they're all of a sudden going to have this precipitous drop? I don't. I think that they were. I always felt that they were going to have a chance to be a competitive team, but as the challenges mount, and you got teams that are playing well and that are good in the Western Conference, I just think as time goes on, there's still some areas of their team that just aren't good enough. But I think their coaching is good, their goaltending is good, and I think they have enough players with NHL experience that can help them.
We were just discussing Connor Hellebuck's post game of the 2-1 victory over Carolina on Saturday, Craig, where he said the first thing he worked on in the summer was his confidence, then his poise, and then he got together with a trainer and started working on his biomechanics. It's a real interesting conversation this week in Winnipeg, and one Jets fans aren't used to is, do you keep riding the hot hand, or do you go back to Mason, who was kind of left out to dry in the first two games? Your thoughts on Connor Hellebuck's three games in a row, and then just the whole, when do you bring Steve Mason back in, or do you keep riding the hot hand?
Yeah, it's always a good question, Jim, and I think that, Steve Mason, I said this, he was no better or no worse than anybody else on Winnipeg Jets in his first two games. So, the part about goaltending is there's somebody else there to take the net. Connor Hellebuck took it, and he did it. You know, Mike Babcock has said this last year. He goes, you build confidence by playing good. So, I know lots of players go and, they want to work on their confidence, but it comes from performing. And I think Connor, has performed very well here for the first in these three games, and certainly that's going to build your confidence. I mean, I'm real straightforward on it. Like, I don't know if there's a science to it, and coaches can look at it and everything. But to me, you play the goalie that's going to give you the best chance to win on that given night. And could it be Steve Mason? Could it be Connor Hellebuck? I don't buy into this, the hot hand, and you play into it. I say, this is the guy that's going to help me win tonight, and this is the guy that I'm going to put in the net. I'll tell you about Scotty Bowman. And you can go back and look at his record. And I'm talking back in the, in those years he was having success. He never played it. Oh, I shouldn't say never. That's wrong. Rarely played his backup against the worst teams in the league. You know that?
I did not.
You know why?
Got to make sure you win them.
He said those are 2 points we're not leaving on the table. And he wanted to serve a notice to his team that those were important points. So that's my example about why I say you play the goalie that thinks gives you the best chance to win, not the guy. So maybe Connor Hellebuck, you're starting to see a little bit of biomechanics, and you see him a little bit fatiguing a little bit, whatever you you're watching on the video, and that's what I say about the science. You go, we need to let him get a little rest here, and we're going to put Mason back in. So that might come on the heels of a three-game winning streak. So what? I don't buy into that. I buy into who gives me the best chance to win my next game, end of story.
Does Toronto have the best top nine in the NHL?
Oh, geez. When you start to ask yourself, is there anybody better, I would say no. There's teams that are close. There's teams that are close. There's teams with seven. There's teams, when you start to look at it. But when you start to look at those at that top nine, it's a pretty impressive group. They can beat you quickly with their skill.
The Edmonton Oilers have had a rough week, and I mean rough in the fact of the fashion in which they were practiced, the comments from their head coach, Todd McClellan, and then they drop another game. They now say from Patrick Maroon, we have to get simpler, we have to play the speed game. What are you seeing from the Oilers at 1-3?
Well, I'll tell you what I see. I see three things. I see a level of competitiveness that isn't nearly high enough to beat teams in the National Hockey League. I don't think they're competing. I think that, you got to dig in. You got to find a way to hold your position in the defensive zone. You got to fight for pucks. You got to fight for your space through the neutral zone and in the offensive zone. You got to work to get into open ice and to make play. I don't see that on any consistent basis. I see it in spurts. And again, the league is too tight for you to work in spurts. That's number one. You know what? You don't have to be a fast skater to play fast. The Edmonton Oilers are not playing fast. They're playing slow. And I think they're, again, that's part of that is their competitive mindset, wanting to get to area. So they are playing slow right now, and they need to play a whole lot faster. And defensively, their blue liners look like they're playing defense for the first time in their lives. I mean, they're in the wrong position. They get out of position quickly. They chase the play. They turn over the puck. And that's put an inordinate amount of pressure on Cam Talbot. And I think that those are the three areas that they gotta really clean up, because those are three areas that they've shown that they're capable of being better in. But if they don't get better in, it's going to be much like Saturday night, 6-0 or 6-1 losses against teams that are really well coached and really disciplined and are going to take advantage of you. And you know that's Todd McClellan's task right now.
Craig, it seems to me with the successful penalty kills in the NHL right now, it's you see those teams being very aggressive and removing time and space from whoever has the puck. How important is aggression for a successful penalty kill, in your opinion?
I'm a huge pressure guy. I've always felt like put pressure, make people perform under pressure, force them to have to do things quickly. And, you know, everybody knows when you go in, I mean, they're in the penalty kill meetings and they're going, okay, well, geez, you know, Connor McDavid's fast. Well, no kidding, he's fast. But you know what? What you want to do is figure out who are the players you can pressure a little bit more, who are the players you got to be a little bit more leery of, and you got to really be able to recognize it quickly. You give players a little bit of space, a little bit of time now in the NHL, and they're going to make plays. So I think you want to force them into doing things a little bit quicker than they're comfortable in doing, and we're seeing that in penalty killing. And the other part of it too is, and I'm not just seeing it now in the neutral zone. I shouldn't say when they get into the offensive zone. I'm also seeing it in the neutral zone and up ice. You know, the teams are putting pressure up ice. They're not letting teams come up the ice easily. And now with that drop play, that drop pass play that teams have instituted into their power plays, you're seeing more teams pressure in the neutral zone and forcing a play there too. So it's not just, when you're in a defensive zone penalty killing, it's in all the zones that teams are being very aggressive penalty killing. And, you know, again, coaches adapt and, you know, they're going to be watching video and trying to figure out ways around this.
Craig Button, TSN hockey analyst, joining us on the big show this morning, TSN 1290, 43 minutes past the hour with Jim Troy and Brandon. The LA Kings are undefeated and have four wins right now. Does that surprise you as it does me? I know it's early, but I didn't expect much from the Kings this year.
Yeah, I think, Jim, I'd put myself in the same boat as you in terms of what the expectations were on the Kings, just specifically because of what's happened three years. You know, they made the playoffs, got dusted, only won one game and missed the playoffs the other 2 years. It's a team that I thought was challenged to score. I didn't think they were real quick. I mean, we all know how they were able to be possession monsters with the puck, but they weren't able to finish. But John Stevens has them playing quicker. We talked about playing fast. They're playing fast. They're playing quick. The defensemen are jumping into the attack. And they're really I think that the LA Kings, their game now of transition and attack has become at a much higher pace. And I think that they're taking advantage of it. They lost to the Flames the other night. And I think the shots on goal were 43-37 for the Kings. Now, you know, the Kings, I mean, they could go three games and not give up 37 shots. But they looked really comfortable in that game, and they got 43. I mean, that would be a lot of times they would outshoot a team 21-14 or 21-15, and they would have the puck for 60% of the game or 65% of the game. But they wouldn't score, and they were tight. I don't see that in them. I see them playing a lot freer. And guess what? That's fun for the players, too, and they look like they're having a lot of fun.
What's your take on the Alex Galchenyuk situation in Montreal?
You know, it's a real interesting one for me. I mean, you draft a player third overall to be a center, and, you know, you consider what he did a couple years ago when he had 30 goals, and then people, well, you know, it came when the team wasn't very good. Well, last year he was playing center. You know, with Radulov, he was one of the top scorers in the league before he got injured. And comes back, really couldn't find his footing. The Canadians didn't find their footing. And, you know, there's this constant, you know, I don't want to say friction, but back and forth. Is he a center? Is he a winger? He's not going to play wing. Here's what I think about the whole situation with Galchenyuk. I think that Galchenyuk doesn't feel that the team is fully invested in him. And I quite frankly feel that Alex Galchenyuk doesn't feel fully invested in the team. So I think it's been a situation that's been mishandled and hasn't maximized the abilities of Alex Galchenyuk. And I think it's led to an inevitable friction between player and team. And I don't know where they get out of it, but I know this. That team doesn't have a lot of offensive ability. And you're talking about a player. Mark Bergevin said it. Well, you don't get top-end players picking in the middle of the draft. Well, you got one picking three. And I don't think it's been handled very well.
Great stuff as always, Craig. We really appreciate you joining us, and have a great week.
Yeah, you guys too. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Craig.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll tee up the Boss Pizza fan line. Get set for an hour of your phone calls on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
7 minutes away from the Boss Pizza fan line and an hour of your phone calls. Lots to talk about on a Monday after a busy sports weekend, and lots to get to with Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki. You can text 129090 with standard message rates applying, or you can give us a call at 780-1290 at 9 o'clock. Tonight on the station, Monday Night Football, the Indianapolis Colts and the Tennessee Titans.
Woo!
7 o'clock. Monday night, or at the start of the season, that looked like something.
Sure.
I was just looking at a list of the injuries in the National Football League. Aaron Rodgers, Andrew Luck. Then you go through the running backs. Then you go through the receivers. It has been a devastating year. And I mean, I know it's a physical sport. I know guys go down all the time. But this year, to be in week six and to have the names in the receiving core, and now Aaron Rodgers and no Aaron, Andrew Luck and all that. We'll talk some NFL with you as well on the Boss Pizza fan line. But let's start, gentlemen. The Jets beat the Carolina Hurricanes 2-1. They've now won three in a row. They sit with a 3-2 record and get set to host Columbus tomorrow night and Minnesota on Friday. Your thoughts on the game?
Game was solid. All kinds of trouble in the neutral zone, but the Jets were able to overcome it. Carolina was fun to watch in that manner, just watching the Jets trying to penetrate and work their way through the neutral zone. I still don't like what the Jets are. Special teams really bother me. I don't like what the Jets are doing on the power play. It's ridiculous to me that Nikolaj Ehlers is not on the first team. They're not making the most of the talent I don't believe that they have on the power play. Their penalty kill is ridiculously passive, and it's going to hurt them here in the long run. And I wonder if and when we ever see change. I've never seen anybody hit a post as hard as what Patrick Laine did on that one drive. That was unbelievable. Connor Hellebuyck looked real solid, but the boys walk away with the win.
Yeah, I'm not as concerned about the power play. I think that'll eventually come around just by having Patrick Laine there on the left side, but the penalty kill is a major concern. There's no other way to put it. 30th again this year, right ahead of the Edmonton Oilers at 70%. They've got to find a way to fix it. It's just that simple. It's going to take basically a 180 in terms of how they approach killing penalties. But other than that, it was a gutsy win. At least it wasn't a pretty one by any means. And the Jets didn't play, I guess you could say, up to their potential, but maybe the most promising sign early in this season is that Connor Hellebuyck is playing like a true number one, like the guy they thought they were getting by throwing him to the Wolves last year. And if that development continues, the penalty kill is one thing, but having Hellebuyck play the way he is, I know 937 isn't sustainable whatsoever, but even if he drops somewhere to between 915 and 920, that's a major, major development for the team.
It was sloppy. It wasn't pretty to watch. The Hurricanes came as advertised in my mind. Very good on the forecheck and very good through the neutral zone, clogging it up. But to me, it was a game that historically the Jets, when they get into those, don't always win. So it's a positive they pulled it out. We'll see what this week brings. Who do you start in net tomorrow night? What are your thoughts on that? And the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. And your thoughts on the Jets overall now that they sit 3-2 a week after starting devastatingly at 0-2. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers have clinched a playoff spot. They beat the BC Lions 26-20 at Investors Group Field. However, they've lost Maurice Leggett and probably Darvin Adams for a while. Maurice Leggett out for the year.
Tough one to overcome here. And especially when the weakest part of the Blue Bomber team being defense, and you take out arguably their strongest player. So it's going to be this is a tough one, and we'll see who someone steps in there. Can you pick up the slack for the most part there? It's It's a tough one. And Darvin Adams, too, they haven't come out with anything official on him. But, man, it's not hard to imagine that he's going to be out for upwards of a handful of weeks with that shoulder. He got blasted pretty good there. So a couple for both the Jets and the Bombers, a tough weekend in that manner. And losing Maurice Leggett is a considerable blow to this team.
Aaron Rodgers is out for the Green Bay Packers. Whom would you replace him with? And the Major League Baseball playoffs continue. The Dodgers lead the Cubs 2-0, and the Astros lead the Yankees 2-0. Game 3 in that series is tonight in the Bronx. Anything and everything coming up on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. More of you on The Big Show next, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Welcome back to The Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca and the Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 with Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Looking for your thoughts on the Jets beating the Carolina Hurricanes 2-1, your thoughts on the game, your thoughts on Connor Hellebuck. And if he gets the game tomorrow night versus Columbus, which you can hear right here on TSN 1290, or the game on Friday against the Minnesota Wild, do you just keep playing him or do you go back to Steve Mason? And if you do, when do you do such a thing? 3-2, the Jets start the second week of the National Hockey League, or week and a half, I guess. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers beat the BC Lions. They are in the postseason for the second straight year. They will now focus on trying to get a home playoff date, and they'll have to do it without Maurice Leggett, who's done for the year. Torn Achilles tendon. Your thoughts on that loss and how big it is to the defense. And Darvin Adams, so we'll get an update this week on him, but he left the game as well. Your thoughts on the Bombers, the Major League Baseball playoffs, the National Football League, and Aaron Rodgers being out. Here's one thing I didn't ask you guys is, with the fever around Aaron Rodgers going down, was it too much? Like, is it, you know, J.J. Watt's down, Odell Beckham Jr.'s down. I understand fully who Aaron Rodgers is. I have him on my fantasy team as my quarterback. I'm devastated. However, like, it was news across the NFL yesterday that, like, is he that dynamic of a player? Like Marshall Ferguson was saying, you literally tune in to watch him every week.
Absolutely.
It's that big of a hole for the NFL?
I think for sure. And then you couple that, like I said first thing out of the gate this morning, it is quite possible that three of the five most popular or attention-grabbing NFL players, J.J. Watt, Odell Beckham Jr., and Aaron Rodgers, to lose all three of those guys? The way that the league has, that's quite a blow for sure. And when you're talking the impact of Aaron Rodgers to that team and all the rest of it, I can all the noise, people saying dirty head laid it, whatever, by Anthony Barr, I can understand it just because of what Aaron Rodgers is and what he represents, how much he's loved.
Yeah, it's like losing LeBron James. It's like losing Crosby or McDavid. You can just kind of name whatever player you want that's the top of their league. That's what you're missing out on here. And for the Pack, like it just ruins a Super Bowl contender season. It really does. And I mean, not only how many other injuries did they have in that game, and have they had all season? The Packers.
Well, yeah, Montgomery That's Darvin Adams.
We kind of joked about having or getting Adams, Tony Romo back in there to play at quarterback. But if you're Romo, do you want to?
No way.
Do you want to go behind that line behind
sitting,
that team?
A sitting duck in the pocket there. And when you talk about a league struggling for its share, like its TV share and ratings and stuff like that, you lose the big splash of names like Rodgers, Watt, Odell, OBJ. Like that's impactful.
Devontae Adams is what I was trying to say with the Packers injuries. That's an interesting question. Do they stand pat, or do they go get somebody? And does that somebody include Tony Romo?
No. Like Tony Romo literally cannot play. If how often do you see Aaron Rodgers running for his life and Tony Romo can't move? There's no way in the world. To me, I think even he would know that. That would just be suicide for him to go into that situation in Green Bay.
Sports Illustrated actually just put out a headline, the morning huddle. It's almost impossible to envision how the Packers will survive without Aaron Rodgers.
They won't.
So that'll be interesting as well. The Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Your thoughts on the Jets and the Canes, and who do you start in net? Do you keep riding Connor Hellebuck, or do you bring Steve Mason back in, and if so, when? Bombers beat the Lions. They lose Leggett and Adams, and, of course, Major League Baseball playoffs and anything NFL. 780-1290. Who's first on the Big Show?
Let's go to Rocky.
Rocky, you're on the program. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, There's only one obvious choice for the Packers, and that's Kaepernick.
Who just sued the NFL yesterday, right?
Doesn't really want to sue. He just wants to play. So give him a job. He'll drop the lawsuit. But he's the most capable quarterback sitting out there doing nothing at this point.
Yeah,
has been for a while. Yeah.
I think we're all in agreement with that. And that's what I was asking earlier on the show, Rocky, was I get the lawsuit. And I thought it's good for him. However, I just thought maybe it would come maybe week 13, week 14. But he clearly thought, no matter who got injured, that he wasn't going to get a shot again.
Well, I don't think the lawsuit was before the injuries.
Yeah.
I think he's just trying to make a point. I mean, the young man is a capable quarterback, without a doubt. And now what he did has been corrupted, as far as I'm concerned, by the rest of the players. They just made a statement about the president, and he made a statement about racial equality. I think it's been skewed. But so many owners have come out and stood on the sidelines with their players now, said that should no bearing. I think the young man should be playing football. I mean, that's one. And two, Mr. Westwood, sir,
you were
a kicker, according to Peyton Manning. So when it comes to hockey, I don't give you a lot of prowess, man.
I really don't care. You know what, man? I hope you're still on the line.
I give you a lot of kudos. A lot of kudos for quoting stats and everything else. You become a great statistician. I'll give you that one.
Hey, anytime I say something you don't agree with, I double dog dare you to bring it up and let's go tete-a-tete, man. I've played the game for 45 years, studied it my entire life, and that much more so over the last 6 years when it's become my job. If I ever say something that you disagree with, that you think is inherently incorrect, then bring it. I dare anybody out there, bring it. If you want to test me on hockey, bring it.
Fair enough, my friend. I'll give you that one. I'll give you that one, absolutely. But I think I just wanted to get the Peyton Manning quote in because I always thought it was cute.
I'll tell you straight up, I know a lot more about hockey than I do about football.
Well, hey, like Peyton Manning said, you were a kicker. Anyway, have a great day, guys. Thank you.
Take care, man.
Thanks, Rocky.
It's funny how anyone who says that to me never wants to talk hockey. Oh, you got a problem with me in hockey? Then bring it. That's an open invitation.
On the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290 on the Big Show, and you can also text us at 1290-90 with your thoughts. Who's next on the fan line?
Let's go to Jim.
Jim, you're on the program. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, great. Regarding the anthem, there's not one owner that kneeled during the anthem. Jerry Jones made it very clear.
Yep.
We're standing. He kneels beforehand to kind of garner attention for the players and respect to them, what they're trying to do.
And stared at the camera the whole time he was doing that, right? It was so ridiculous.
Sort of. But he made it clear, you kneel during that anthem, you ain't playing.
Yep.
So why doesn't Roger Goodell stand up and do that? Is he incompetent? Or because they're kind of in damage control right now with ratings starting to dip. What do you think, Troy?
Why doesn't Goodell do what?
Stand up and take control of what's going on. It's just getting worse.
Well, I think the way they're trying to exact control on it is by they've had seven team owners now come out and tell the players that they will not tolerate kneeling down at all. That's the NFL is trying to muscle the players at this point in time. That's how they're trying to take control of it. And one of the big discussions last week was inside the Dallas locker room, players looking at Jerry Jones, who's siding with Donald Trump, who has made certain viewings of his and understandings pretty public, and the players being upset about it, but none of them willing to risk their careers for taking a stand against their owner. So it's an interesting spot right now, that's for sure.
The latest I read today, Jim, was both the NFL and the NFLPA are going to sit down and sort of come to an agreement on what to do around the anthem and something that they're both happy with. So that's the latest I've read this morning, but
Which is almost impossible. Like, if we start putting programs in place and all the rest of it, great. But America is such a mess right now. It's just who knows where this is going to end up. Just wait. And you know what, man? Wait until the NBA starts.
And it starts this week.
Yeah.
Tomorrow.
Like, just how are the players? There was actually a team in Germany this over the weekend
in the Bundesliga
who took knees, and the fans and the crowd took knees to honor racism and to support the people, not to honor it, to support the people taking stands against racism in America. That happened in Germany. What's going to happen in the NBA if the players start taking knees, and what if the crowd starts to join them during the anthem and all the rest of it? I think the NBA could have a remarkable impact on this landscape.
NBA starts tomorrow. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. The calls are filling up. We'll get to them momentarily. I just want to remind you that you can also text 1290-90 with standard message rate supplying, and we'll try and get to your thoughts on that. And your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas is at 1215 with Kevin Olszewski and the Don Vito Roundtable, and 515 on the afternoon ride with Huss and Rick. Back to the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. John, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. Good show as usual. Good morning also. Quick question regarding the Bombers with losing Leggett right now. You think a good fit would be, considering he was with the team last year, taking Bass off the Toronto practice roster?
Khalil Bass?
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know, because when he was available, Mike O'Shea said they weren't, you know, that interested and wished him the best. I don't know if this changes thing because they're banged up. I know that's easy to say when, but I mean, the linebacker has been a hot topic all year with the Bombers. Ian Wild is still out, and when he was available then, they weren't interested. I don't know if this changes their mind, do you?
And I don't know that Bass goes to strong side, because that emphasizes coverage. Like, there's a lot of coverage, and that's part of what makes Maurice Leggett so special and good at what he does, is he's really good in coverage. And a guy like Bass, who is a middle linebacker, I'm not sure how in tune that he would be, or like his skill set for that. And on top of it all, I don't think Mike O'Shea is all that crazy about his persona in the locker room. So that's why I don't think you're going to see a guy like Bass here.
And I think Darren Baumann was saying that either Alexander or Fogg would be kind of the interim replacement. So they would definitely be looking for someone more cover than Bass's, I guess, run-stopping.
Thanks for the call, John. One thing we didn't talk about the NFL, Adrian Peterson. First 100-yard game since 2015.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive.
Has a touchdown.
Yeah.
Wants to play four or five more years.
They've said as an organization, we're just feeding him the ball. They're just going to feed him the ball.
That's what he wanted.
It's pretty cool.
Back to the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Who's next?
Let's go to Jonesy.
Jonesy, you're welcome back to the program. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I just had a couple questions about the Bombers.
Yep.
I just was wondering, who do we have to, in terms of depth for U.S. receivers right now? Like, we got Langford, Clarence, Denmark. T.J. Thorpe's gone, right? He's not on the practice roster.
That's right, yeah.
I just wondering who we have, like, that can step in. Like, obviously, you're not going to replace Darvin Adams, but who do we even have for a warm body?
I think that LaDainian Washington is the guy that they'll rely on the most at this point in time if Adams is out for a while.
Okay, and are we? Do you think we'll continue with two Canadians at receiver?
It's a great question. Fiola Gudino played pretty good, didn't he?
Yeah, I thought so. I just didn't know if Matt Coates was going to be enough to scare some. Like, I just figured they're going to bear down on Harris so much that it's going to take away Harris from the game.
Yeah, I'm not sure how long Flanders is going to be out. I don't think it's a long term thing. So he might be ready to go upcoming again this week.
And what about Dressler? What's the word on his return?
That I'm not sure. I'm not sure how long or what that situation
doesn't,
is.
Doesn't seem too far away, but I don't know about this upcoming week, whether he'd be good or not. But, he mentioned American receivers there, and a name to maybe keep an eye on is Chris Givens on the Bombers practice squad, a guy who played in the NFL for a fair sure amount of time. So you wonder, once he gets acclimated with the offense, I guess it depends on Darvin Adams' injury, because he's a guy, I guess, similar body build to Adams, and if he could pick up the offense pretty quick, that could be maybe a sleeper name to keep an eye on.
He only has one catch, but what about Drew Wolitarski as well? He's Canadian, but came out of the University of Minnesota. I don't know if he's at least playing or was. He's only got one catch on the year, but there are some options. It's going to be interesting. I was at practice last week. I saw Weston Dressley was out there but not participating, but he was running around a little bit, so I don't know how close he is either.
I can't wait. I think that Wolitarski is a stud in waiting.
That's maybe somebody who gets an opportunity now as well for more reps or more passes. All right, Jonesy?
Yeah, just regarding, we can never replace Mo Leggett, but do you think that they're going to go like with Kevin Fogg there, or what are your thoughts there?
That's what Darren Baumann is reporting initially for us. That's the immediate right now. They'll have to see how practice weighs out, but that's probably the logistical one as of today. Who knows where they go once practice gets underway. All right, thanks, Jonesy. We got to get to a break, but we'll take more of your calls on the Boss Pizza fan line. 780-1290 next on The Big Show. TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
780-1290 to get your thoughts in and comments and questions with Jim Toth, Troy Wester, Brandon Ruwicki on The Big Show, TSN 1290. We're talking Jets and Canes, Bombers in the playoffs, injuries, however, Major League Baseball playoffs in the NFL as well, with all the injuries going on after, well, almost week six. Monday Night Football tonight, Colts are in Music City to take on the Titans, 7 p.m. live right here on TSN 1290. Back to the phone lines. Janet, you're on The Big Show. Go ahead.
Hello?
Hi, Janet.
Hi. I just want to talk about Connor and Mason.
Sure.
If Connor plays well, I would like him to play the home games that are just coming up. And why doesn't Mason just start on the road and then start playing?
Well, it's interesting, and I see both sides of it, and I tend to agree with you. But it's been 9 days since Steve Mason's got a game in, and I think that's the concern, is if you wait until you go on the road, you're now talking like 2 full weeks between game time. Paul Maurice said on Saturday that he was going with Hellebuck, A, because Hellebuck deserved it, and B, Mason hasn't had a practice or a game on the last few days. So they're going to practice today, and it'll be interesting to see what they do. But I think that's the main concern is, and I don't think it's anything mental. At this point, I just think it's, you know, you want to have both guys going and being game sharp, and you don't want a goaltender, you know, having those two games and then sitting 14, 16 days before his next game.
It's a delicate decision to make, man.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I, and to me, I'm riding the guy that's playing really well. I'm going to play him until there's a hiccup, and then that opens the door for the other guy. The other guy can rip off 7-8 games, then he's going to go. These guys are pros. It's up to them when they have the opportunity to be wicked razor sharp. I think that's part of the beauty of that super hot internal level of competition that we're watching transform before us with this position. I think it's awesome. I'd go with the guy that's super solid until there's a blip.
Yeah, I think you go. I even think you have to have a decision about whether or not Hellebuck goes tomorrow night.
Yeah,
I think that one's set in stone. But then it's the Friday game where things get a little bit more interesting. And I would probably lean towards Steve Mason in that game, regardless of what Hellebuck does tomorrow night.
Yeah, I think so too. In my mind, he's got to play one of the two. I lean towards Hellebuck tomorrow night against Columbus, and then two more practice days, and then you get Mason in on Friday. That's what I would do, but I think he's got to get in one of the two before he heads out on the road.
And then if Mason dishes the shutout, I guess you're going, you got the backup coming on the 26th and 27th, so, you know, although Maurice we've seen before where he'll run one guy there, but you just wonder if Mace dishes the shutout on the 20th, then what? How does that change the thing, right? What a great problem.
Yeah, usually
to have,
goalie controversies happen when it's, well, this guy played gave poorly, up four, yeah, the other one gave up three. What do we do here?
It's so weird you're calling for a shutout, maybe, and now what do we do? As opposed to, is there anyone in the farm we might think of bringing up? It's interesting this year. Janet, we appreciate the call. Thank you. Otto, you're on The Big Show, TSN 1290. Go ahead, Otto.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Good. A couple things. First, I want to talk about the starting six, the top six forwards, and then the penalty kill. But the top six, of course, our first line's really good with Scheifele and Wheeler. It doesn't matter who you put on that other side with them. That line is going to be really good. Just a little worried about the second line and, Patrick Laine not really being utilized very much on that line, or it's just I don't know if there's something you can do to balance it out a little bit better, so you got the first line and the second line both firing really strong, just because it's kind of been Patrick Laine's kind of not performed as well as I'd hoped so far. And the second thing, the penalty kill, is they got to change that system, whatever structure they're running. They just got to change it to a simple box or a diamond or something, it's a lot easier and a lot more simple, because it's when your numbers are consistently that bad for how many seasons you have to change something. You can't just keep going with the same thing, you know, and, you know, that's kind of all I have to say, and I'd like to see what you guys have to say about that.
Thanks for the call, Otto. I agree. I think that, you know, they definitely have to look at it, but I also lean towards Paul Edmonds' line of thinking. Five games, you're 3-2. They are where they are, like I think it's 30th and then 25th on the power play. You want those to be better. I'd give it another 3 to 5 games, and then I would sit down and, you know, if you lose the next three, I would look at it really hard and do something. If you're 3-2 in the next five and you're 6-4 on the season, I'd still try to fix it and work it. But I'm sort of in that, especially with injuries, Lowry being out, Perreault now. Kulikov might not be back. Those things all weigh into it with me. So I just give it a little bit more time before I over panic about their numbers. But you're bang on about how they are just like they were last year.
I say it's time, right? I'll ignore the number. Just look at them structurally and what they do on their penalty kill, man. And when you're collapsing that low, that deep, that goal against the Canes, man, you could smell that coming 3 seconds before it happened. Every single stride, the Jets are so small and so deep in their own zone. I just detest what they're doing from a penalty kill standpoint. And when you compare it to the other teams in the league that have a successful penalty kill, it is as night and day as you get from some of the suffocating immediately on the puck carrier PKs that you're seeing. And like what Craig Benton was saying, I touched on it earlier this morning, you're not seeing it just in the defensive zone, but you're seeing teams thwart breakouts and the offensive side of the ice, and they're actually causing 15-second delays, 20-second delays sometimes, of allowing teams to come up and through the neutral zone because of how aggressive they are on the other team in the offensive zone. So it's what they're trying to accomplish is just remarkable, and it's so different from what the successful teams are running.
Blaine, we'll get you to hang on the line. Thank you, Otto. We got a break, but we'll get to you next and everybody else on the Boss Pizza Fan Line. 780-1290 on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca, Monday Night Football on TSN 1290. Tonight at 7 has the Indianapolis Colts in Tennessee to face the Titans. Back to the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Blaine, you're on the program. Thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Well, how are you?
Good. It's Blaine from Brandon. I had a few things. Did you guys think Buff seemed way more locked in on Saturday, for one?
No question.
And Troy, like, whoever's challenging your hockey knowledge, I disagree. You know what you're talking about, dude.
Thanks, bro.
I disagree with that.
There's no question Buff was way more tuned in, though, huh?
Sorry, guys, go ahead.
There's no question Buff was, like, Buff just kept it simple. And then really the way he, in the third period, flexed his physical level, that was, I don't understand. Man, if he played like that game in, game out, he would be spectacular.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like he needs to be locked in all the time.
I like the point that Wicks made earlier, is that it's not like he was chasing any open ice hits. He was just guys coming close to him, leaning into him. When you got a 60 or 80 pound advantage on everyone on the ice, like, you saw how easy he bumps guys off the puck and all the rest of it. Like, just finish your checks, play with a certain level of intensity, and you're an unstoppable force out there that inspires the entire team and building.
Yeah, and the problem with trying to get Buff to play like that all the time, and it doesn't matter what physical sport you've played, but everybody's played with a bigger dude, and they just don't have kind of a mean streak in them, right? Like a gentle giant sort of thing.
That's
Dustin Byfuglien. Like, I just don't think he's inherently a physical, angry person.
Remember, though, when he went up to forward? That entire season, like, he became much more physical up there, and then when he was put back on D, that entire playoff run for the Jets, I thought there was a noticeable, like, what's really sad to me, guys, and I agree with you totally, Wicks, that, you know, you are your personality, and you can't really change that too much, but isn't it tragic that you're talking about a 260-pound behemoth out there, and that it's so noticeable on the nights that he decides to be a little bit physical.
Dustin Byfuglien played 24 minutes and 14 seconds in his return to the lineup, 241 on the power play, 133 on the penalty kill. He had an assist, and he was on the ice for both Jets goals.
And he's only credited with two hits, and that's horse crap.
Two hits, yeah.
Like he had three, four big ones in the last minute period, yeah.
Yeah, he was. I honestly thought he was going to get a penalty in the last 2 minutes, and I thought, oh, here we go. But I thought it was a good return to the lineup. Blaine, appreciate your call. Thanks for doing that. Hello to everybody out in Brandon as well, and thanks for tuning us in here on TSN 1290. Back to the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Keith, you're on the program. Go ahead, Keith.
Yeah, I'll talk about Kaepernick. He took a knee to protest racism in the police force in the United States. He asserts that the police are instinctively treating blacks worse just because they're black. And, you know, that kind of clicked with me as to why Troy is so hard on Buff. Buff would be the top four defenseman on any NHL team out there. And yet he is the focus of criticism after criticism. And that's a possible reason, isn't it, Troy?
You think because I'm racial, Keith?
Yeah.
Really? Well, sir, I challenge you to view any aspect, point of my life where race comes into play, man. I put my record on display for anyone to take in. And feel free to speak to any teammates or anyone who is of color around me my entire life, you fool.
As much as Troy and I disagree on Dustin Byfuglien, I do not have any inclination that it's race-related at all. In fact, it's quite the opposite for how vocal he is about that stuff. Thanks for the call, Keith, on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Derek, you're next on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Go ahead, Derek.
Hey, good morning. Just going back to the Bomber game this weekend, this is mostly directed towards Troy, seeing that he played the game. A couple questions here. The first one, did BC figure out the Bomber defense 53 minutes into the game? Or did the Bombers, change their defense at that point?
Yeah, I think they just went into the old sort of fall back and try and keep everything in front of you, but allow big, chunky plays to happen, right? And we see how often we see that. I think it was that they gained 136 of their 356 yards in the final 5 minutes, and the Bombers just sort of managing that situation. Similar to what we saw in Montreal when Montreal ended up losing the game. Sometimes you see teams' Ds just sort of relax like that and play a different style.
Yeah, so my follow-up to that is you see it with every team.
Yeah.
And I really think that's what got Saskatchewan rolling this year, when you see the best 30 to nothing, and then they decided not to play the last 8 minutes against Saskatchewan or 5 minutes against Saskatchewan. But, why would we change something 53 minutes into the game that's been so successful? And now I know it's probably not the reason, but it's possibly the reason that we lost our best player. So now a guy is getting a playoff-clinching win, all have a sour taste in their mouth. And do you think the Bombers can get over this? Because, I don't understand why people take their foot off the pedal, especially professionals. I just don't get it. It happens in football. It's just amazing that it happens. And I truly think that's the reason Saskatchewan's going to make the playoffs this year, because in BC, when they were down 30 points, they got 15 at the end of the game. Then they shell-shocked BC the next week and got rolling. And I just don't understand why we would take the foot off the pedal and the foot off the gas with 7 minutes left in the game. We should have had our offense with the ball the last 7 minutes, and some of these injuries may not have happened.
Yeah, you know,
have a great day, guys.
Derek,
yeah, you too.
I like the call a lot. And, you know, you can take your thought there of why do – and, hey, man, football teams, any league, NFL, CFL, they all do it, right? That prevent D. You see it in hockey too. When you got a two-goal lead in the third period, send one forechecker, and everyone sits back, and you wait. You see it in soccer. You got a one- or two-goal lead. You sit back, park the bus, and you sit there, and all of a sudden you change the strategy that gave you the lead, and you're all of a sudden willing to just absorb, thinking that the opposing team offensively can't cause enough damage or chaos to tie the game up. And I can't stand it. In all of the sports, it's always bugged the heck out of me. It's driven me nuts in football, the whole prevent thing. I agree 100% with you, man, where just continue to do – the best form of defense really is when the puck ball is on the other side of the field or and away from your goal line net, right? All those sorts of things. I agree with you. I don't like how – you see that mentality shift all the time, but it's not just a football thing. It happens in all the leagues and all the sports.
And you know why I think it does? And coaching probably plays a big role in it too, but I think you also have to look at human nature. And that's why I think when you look at it across all sports, if for a DB, for example, in the Bomber game, are you going to try and play press or, hey, maybe I'll play off 3, 4, 5 yards here and just give him a short little pass? Like, it's you become so risk averse, and I think people are just risk averse in general, that it just gets amplified by when you're up late in a game by multiple scores, whether it's hockey or football or soccer even, that you just generally kind of revert to, well, let's just do the safe thing here and try not to get burned.
It's always directed by the coaches. Right, like I don't even know if players. I remember listening to some conversations and players. I don't know that players like it either. I've never understood it. I can understand. Like you can still maintain what you're doing earlier or what your more natural state of defense is, and whatever your team, the game that you're playing, without taking risk necessarily. Right, like. Remove the risk element of what you might engage in early in a game or when you're looking for a goal. Just remove that part and continue to play that same defense in whatever sport it is you're playing. But to the degree, the level of passivity you see sometimes, Montreal is the perfect example in that home Bomber playoff game, right? Where the first Bomber touchdown, they just basically walked them into the end zone and thought that they were comfortable and safe still with the amount of time left. And then all of a sudden the onside kick, and you got all kinds of trouble. I can't stand it, man. Stay aggressive. Stay going after it and just continue what got you that level of success in the first place.
Thanks for the call, Derek. We appreciate it. The Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290, if you want to weigh in on the conversations on this and going forward. The Winnipeg Jets return to practice today. They had yesterday off from Paul Maurice, and we'll find out more about Matthew Perreault and Dmitry Kulikov, who both left the game. And of course, Adam Lowry did not play in the game, told it was an upper body injury going into the Vancouver game. And I don't know if it got worse or just didn't get better. So Adam Lowry was not around either. If there needs to be some call-ups, gentlemen, it'll be interesting. Kyle Connor, Jack Rossovic, Brendan Lemieux, all with 5 points.
Yeah, like, interesting. Is it a no-brainer? Right? Kyle Connor, bam, up. If Perreault's out, like, you look at the only points secured by anyone who has played in the bottom six this year for the Winnipeg Jets, there's been one goal, the shorty by Tanev, and one assist by Kopp. That is it. Mathias, Lowry, Dano, Patan, Armia all have 0 points.
Well, if it's for Perreault, it's a no-brainer to me. If it's for Lemieux... I don't know what you do if you bring up Brendan Lemieux or if you bring in Scarbosa or if you bring in...
That would cause people to faint, wouldn't it, if they brought up Lemieux as opposed to Kyle Connor?
Well, Connor's a winger, and...
You mean if Lowry's out, you mean, sorry.
Lowry,
you
yeah.
said Lemieux, yeah.
Oh, I'm... Yeah. Yeah, no, if Lowry's... If it's Perreault, it's a no-brainer for Kyle Connor. If it's Lowry, I don't know if it's Kyle Connor or if it's Lemieux or Rossovic or Scarbosa. Scarbosa's a center. He's got 4 points in 4 games. And then if you do something else on the third line center and whoever you bring up, if it's a center, you put in the fourth line. Or if it's Adam Lowry and you bring up Kyle Connor anyway and put somebody else in the middle, it'll be interesting.
It's getting to the point where Kyle Connor can't be kept in the AHL much longer. I don't think he's going to learn much there. He's completely dominating play in through 4 games, never mind the point totals that he's got, which is pretty ridiculous, but he's averaging 5 shots a game too.
And you know, guys, and I talked about this earlier, where if it is Kyle Connor that comes, if Pro's out and Kyle Connor comes up, I don't think you can have Connor, Little, Laine. And I think there you have to bump Wheeler down with Little to have Connor, if that's going to be the line. And then a lot of Jets fans get what we've all been waiting for, and there might be no turning back from in Ehlers, Scheifele, and Laine.
Speaking of call-ups and injuries, gentlemen, have you guys seen the – is it GIFs or GIFs? I never know what the kids are saying.
I think GIFs.
GIFs?
Is what they call it.
Michael Remus will let me know.
I think it's GIF, isn't it? I don't know.
There's a GIF/GIF, and it's Brett Favre when he heard Aaron Rodgers is out for the year. and he's got a beard in his flow, and he shaves his beard, trims his eyebrows, gets all ready, and then smiles like, I'm ready to go, baby.
The Wranglers is all ready. Huh?
Yeah, he's all ready. So that's hilarious to me. We'll take a break. Take more of your calls on the Boss Pizza fan line. You want to weigh in on the conversation, 780-1290 on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290 with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and your calls. Randy, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead, Randy. Hi, Randy. All right, try again, Randy. Richard, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead, Richard.
Yeah, I don't want to direct this to Troy because he was a football player. Okay, so we lost a great leader in Mo Leggett. And you guys had mentioned something about Fogg taking his place. Was Fogg a defensive halfback? I can't remember.
Yes.
Okay, so now... Why would you take him out of him being a defensive halfback? Aren't you weakening then the defensive back's position? Is there not somebody else, Troy, on the team that they could bring in? Do they not have, for example, their taxi squad, somebody that they could bring in?
He's just not a starter. It's Walker and Alexander on the weak side, and Fogg typically plays a backup role there. So what they're thinking is to and I believe Fogg has filled in before intermittently. So they're taking him out of the backup situation and putting him into that strong side linebacker.
You don't think that would weaken the defense?
As opposed to having a natural strong side linebacker there,
right?
I suppose it would, sir, but I don't think with their depth, like they've got all kinds of depth, weak side and middle, but the strong side linebacker is utilized so much in pass coverage that if you're going to err on one side or the other, it's much better to have, I believe, someone who excels in coverage than, say, specifically a run stopper.
Okay, what about Wild? I had heard that he was out on the practice field. Is he not ready to come back?
I'm not sure. Darren Bombing was saying that he's very close to coming back, but even him, I think you'd rather have Fogg at strong side than an Ian Wild, for instance. And you know, with the play of Santos Knox and even Knox, I'm not so sure how guaranteed Ian Wild's spot is once he's healthy.
Yeah. The other thing, Dressler, is this a reoccurring injury with Dressler?
Yeah, I don't think it's reoccurring, but he's 32 years old and a small fella, right? Like I think he weighs 170 pounds and catches a lot of his balls in the middle of the field the way he does in traffic. So I just think we're witnessing a situation here with Weston Dressler where with his age and his size both kind of starting to clash a little bit there that he's becoming a little bit more injury prone.
And, gentlemen, this is for all of you. Whoever thinks that you guys are racist, that is absolutely crap. I've never once from any of you guys ever heard any racial remarks. And I want you to know, I think you treat everybody as equal. And I just think that was a dumb comment. And I just enjoy your show. I love the way you guys, I like the way you guys cut each other up. It's funny. It's actually funny.
Thanks, Richard. Thanks, Matt.
As a Hungarian, I feel... Thank you, Richard. We appreciate your comments and you listening and the call. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Carrie, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, that was a great weekend for you, Jim, with your Bears and the Astros. Eh?
Oh.
Hello, Carrie.
Yes, I was rolling.
Hey, Westwood.
Yeah?
You are a cushion today, aren't you?
Dude, that picture that you sent my way over the weekend was quite funny. Whoever did the Photoshop on that was masterful.
When I saw that, Troy, I thought, oh, my God, that is funny.
That was so well done. We were at the Jets game in the press box, and he elbowed me and showed me that photo. And what it is that photo from a couple of years ago when they were in New York, Long Island, and they had a couple of days off after the Rangers-Devils game, and they were practicing, and Kane wasn't practicing. And Bufflin's coming off the ice, and Kane is reaching out to grab him. They're obviously a joke or whatever, and Bufflin's just giving him the bird. And somebody put Westwood's head on that. And in the press box when he elbowed me, that looked so real. I was like, when did you go at it with Boff? That looked real. Anyways, it was well done.
It kind of looked like Troy must have made like 3 field goals in his row because his head was a little enlarged. So I'm not sure. But yeah, Troy, you know what? You and I, we go back and forth. And I disagree with what everyone's saying about you today. You know your game. You know what's going on. You're in tune with the league. You're in tune with the players. Just keep what you do. That's why people are listening. And if they're not talking about you, Troy, then that's when you know your time is done, right?
Thanks, Garrett. It's not everyone, man. One dude said that he laughed at my hockey stuff, and the other guy thinks that maybe I'm racial.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
Exactly. Totally ridiculous.
Bring it. Yeah.
Hey,
as for the Bears game, I picked up my TV and put it back down about 8 times, but it did survive.
Jim, I won my pool this weekend because of the Bears. Out of 20 guys, I was... 2 guys picked the Bears, and I was one of them.
Now you're rolling, man. Your whole week. You know what else? Because of that Bears win, I bet you it's pretty nice out this whole week.
You know what? The sun is going to shine, right?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, guys. I like the way the Jets played. The Bombers, I'm not so worried about. I think Fogg can handle that in there. I'm a little... How bad is it that T.J. Thorpe walked away from this team right now, though? That's a little upsetting still now with what we have for the corpse.
Yeah. Got to agree with that.
I think we need Flanders back. That'll definitely get things going again. You guys have a great week, and talk to you guys later.
Take care, Kerry.
Thanks, Kerry. Have a good day. Thanks to all the callers. We appreciate you weighing in. And, of course, the lineup. There are questions around Matthew Perreault's health, Dmitry Kulikov, and Adam Lowry's. They'll practice today. Kevin Olszewski will have the latest from practice on the Don Vito Roundtable at 11 a.m. and your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas. And, of course, Rick Ralph and Hustler with the Gondola Pizza warm-up. And then Ralph will join Huss for the afternoon ride. We'll have the latest on that as well. And Monday Night Football on the station, TSN 1290. The Colts are in Tennessee to take on the Titans. That's at 7 o'clock. We have some ticket giveaways to go. If you don't want to watch that Monday Nighter and you love Kings of Leon like I do, we have a pair of tickets. They're tonight at Bell MTS Place. You have to pick them up before 4:30, but if you want them, they're yours. 12th caller through 780-1290. And then Roger Waters at Bell MTS Place on Sunday, October the 22nd. We have a pair for those too. So if you can make it tonight and are a big fan of Kings of Leon, we'll give you those. And if you want to go to Roger Waters, 12th and 13th caller through 780-1290. It's game day tomorrow. Columbus in town to take on the Jets. We'll be all over it here on the big show. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we thank you for listening and the calls. And the big show will be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.